We are now recording.
Thank you, Kurt. It's January 25th, 2022, preferably. Called the Board of Technical Registration to order. Kurt, could you do the roll call, please?
Clinton Campbell. Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Helmuth Hack.
Here.
Jennifer Hovick. She said she would be remote. Michael Kaleka.
Here.
Colleen Lindgren.
Here. Right.
Thank you, Colleen. Clarence McAllister.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Stacy Skanky.
Here.
Kent Wilson.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt. Okay, the first order of business is the adoption of minutes. This is for December the 7th. Any discussion by the board on those minutes? If not, we can have a motion.
Move to accept.
Second. Is there a second? Thank you.
I'll second that.
We have a first and a second.
So,
Clarence, I think, seconded. Helmuth did the initial.
So, board members, just to help us, since there's more and some are virtual, if as we go throughout this meeting, if you could maybe just say your last name before your vote, you know, Hack, I move, or what, you know, something like that, so we can make sure we're accurate. Thank you so much.
We're missing two. Should we do a voice vote, or should we do a roll call?
You would do a voice roll call. You would just do voice, but then those who were on would have to speak up separately.
Okay.
Say their last name at least. And, yeah.
Okay, let's have a vote. All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
We have Kent and Colleen. Can you share your vote, please?
Aye.
Kent is an aye.
Okay, thank you. That's a unanimous vote. Okay, call the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38431.01H, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Anybody want to address the board? Okay, let's move on. No items for referral, enforcement matters. Kurt, we've got, gosh, a bunch of people calling in. Let's do, these are all 6A, 1 through 6. These are motions for dismissal or administrative closure. Kurt, I understand we have the alleger's Susie Carmen here for 6A1.
I also want to grab the sign-in sheet, as there are people here physically. Let me grab that for you.
Sure.
Then you might be able to call them.
Susie Carmen, are you here?
She's going to be in call. Did everyone sign in on this form and getting in here?
No, we thought that was what we wanted to speak to.
Correct. Well, anybody else going to speak publicly? Okay. All right. Doesn't look like anybody's going to speak publicly on that.
So, do we need to call?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
We have
6A1.
Yeah, 6A1.
Thank you.
This is Kurt Winter with the BTR. Susie, star 6 to unmute yourself if you're muted.
I'm muted.
All right, I can hear you now.
Thank you for your interest in this case. This is case 6A1, case number is HI21-020. This was a complaint filed on the 21st involving home inspection at 11444 North 28th Drive, unit number 15 in Phoenix, Arizona. The complaint involves a failure to adhere to the standards of practice for Arizona home inspectors by failing to call in out failing stuck on exterior walls. This is case A1, so we've got Susie Carmen on a call. Ms. Carmen, under the advice of counsel, we've had to dismiss this case administratively. So we've lost our position to, make a decision on this. But I will give you a few minutes to share your position on this if you so choose.
I see you're on the computer now, so you'll have to hit the mic button at the bottom left.
Thank you very much for giving me the time to hear my case. Well, basically, my complaint was based on a faulty home inspection that lacked a lot of information and misled me into buying the house. It is my understanding that the company or the individual whose name appears as the inspector, the registration was revoked. But I'm under the impression that if that person wants to refile or reactivate his registration, they would need to answer to this complaint. Is that so?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. So basically, this is just an administrative procedure because by being revoked, there's no other action that the board may take, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm sure that I will hear from you if anything changes, and I really appreciate the time that you have dedicated to my case.
I appreciate your interest, and I hope your problem resolves itself quickly.
Thank you. Hoping the same. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to item 6A2.
The motion still needs to be made.
Even for, okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion with Kaleika to proceed with dismissing the case.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Stacy, thank you. All those in favor of dismissing this case, per the council's recommendation, please say aye.
Aye.
Colleen? And?
Aye.
And? Kent?
Kent. Aye.
Thank you. That's a unanimous vote. Okay, let's move on to 6A2. This is case number 22015. The respondent is, I understand, is here. Mr. Ream, can you help me with the pronunciation of this name, please?
Pretty Sergeant.
I struggle without myself.
Gabriel Georges, thank you. Are you online, Mr. Okay. Thank you.
I'm actually James Deffridge. Both Mogus and I have related cases. He's out working, and I'm listening for both cases.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And I acknowledge that there is a second case following this, 6A3. Can we do these together? Okay.
Absolutely. I would recommend that as well, just because of the nature of the cases.
Okay, thank you. Synopsis of the complaint on September the 20th, 2021. The board received a complaint alleging that on or about September 1st, 2021, respondent prepared and sealed an evaluation drainage repair report for a home located at 1791 Rim Road in Lakeside, Arizona, in which he incorrectly decreased the original design's compaction requirements under the concrete walkway and decrease the drain pipe sloping from 0.5% to 0.25%. It is further alleged the respondent's decreases to what was originally required were not only unjustified, but they benefited the contractor whom respondent had a relationship with, causing harm to the client. Kurt, the ledger is not here, is that correct?
Here, not on my list.
Okay. This went through an EAC review, and we have a recommendation for dismissal. Mr. Deathridge, do you want to share your position on this? I think there is a recommendation from our EAC committee to dismiss this. Do you want to add to this?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, we've had, like, our company's been in business since 1996. We've had over 5,000 clients. We do the very best we can to satisfy them. Mr. Binder was not going to be satisfied. I did a lot of extra work trying to address his concerns, and every time I did, he came back with new and really unrelated concerns. He just really didn't like this contractor and really wanted to, you know, cause the contractor harm. And you know, we've worked with this contractor before. We work with several foundation repair contractors, and I thought the contractor bent over backwards trying to meet Mr. Binder's needs and requirements. And, you know, we did the best we could, but got to the point where we just had to say, hey, we can't keep doing this. And then he threatened us, and we're here now.
Okay, thank you for that. I think the EAC recommended dismissal in this case, so hopefully this will be put behind you. We have two cases here that are related, P22-015 and P22-016. Is there a motion from the board? Or any discussion, actually?
No comment here.
And you're welcome to ask the investigator, Greg, any questions if you have any.
No, I move to dismiss both
cases.
Mrs. Hack.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
McAllister, second.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor of dismissing cases P22015 and P22016, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Killeen?
Aye.
I'm Kent.
This is Kent. Aye.
Okay, we have a unanimous vote. Thank you. Stephen McLean, is that a call in or is he here?
There's a call in.
It's number four.
I know, I was going to do four and six as a consent, but if he was here, I wanted to do him next.
Are we going to do
685,
is that correct?
Yeah, I thought if he was here, we would do him. But if not, we'll just go ahead and do a consents for 4 and 6 and then call him.
Okay.
And I'll let you maybe call while we do the consent for 4 and 6. Cases 684 and 686 are both on consent for dismissal. Not consent, but recommended from staff for dissolution or dismissal. Is there a motion?
I move to, this is a hack, I move to dismiss A4 and A6.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
Second. Kalaika.
We have a first and a second. All those in favor of dismissal of 6A4 and 6A6, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
And Kent?
This is Kent. Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote.
And Mr. Chair? If I may, just for the record, 6A4 was HI-22-010, and 6A6 was P-22-012, I believe.
Okay, sorry, yep. I should have read that. Okay, 6A5, this is P-22037. Is he online, Kurt?
I'm going to call him now.
Thank you.
able to answer the phone right now, so leave a message with your name and number you can be reached, and I'll call you back as soon as I can. Thanks for calling. Bye.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To send a fax, press 4 now. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hello, Mr. McLean. This is Kurt Winter at the AZBTR. We're calling you in the board meeting, but we'll try you again later.
Do we need to come back to this, or can we? This is a recommendation for dismissal. Can we go ahead and vote? Since he didn't call in?
It's up to you. I didn't say we'd call him back, but
you can move forward if you want.
I've read through this several times, and this just seems to be an unhappy neighbor and some poor communication. Mr. Heck, do you have any opinion on this?
The only thing I would say is the guy needs to get business cards.
Yeah.
So when he's back there, he can hand them out instead of just verbally, given a phone number. He really needs business cards. It could have gone much worse than it did. I mean, the police could have been called.
Right.
He would have still continued to work, but it's just not the way to do business.
Well, hopefully
and
this
and that's
this,
on him.
This
the
complaint,
board don't care.
Hopefully this complaint will get him to acknowledge the importance of better communication.
Yeah. But I would move to dismiss P22037.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hack. Is there a second?
I'll second, Stacy.
Thanks, Stacy. All those in favor dismissing 685 P22037, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
And Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay, that completes 6A, 1 through 6. Let's move on to B1, 6B1.
Chairman?
Mr. Heck.
These are all signed consent orders. Maybe we can just do them together, unless someone's here to speak.
I don't think we can do that because
I've got to recuse myself on 6A2, so we could do
1, 3, and 4.
Okay. Is there a motion then to accept staff recommendation as well as the signed consent?
We could do them all, you just don't vote on it.
Then we'd have to do individual votes.
Yeah,
so let's just do 6A or 6B1, 3, and 4, accept the consent agreements.
Mr. Chair, this is Kaleika. I will make a motion to accept agenda item 6B1, case P21053, agenda item 6B3, case HI22-004, and agenda item 6B4, case HI22-003.
I second.
Okay, we have a first and second. Thank you. All those in favor of dismissing these three cases, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
We're actually not dismissing.
I'm sorry. We're accepting the. I need to change that motion. We're accepting the consent agreements, the signed consent agreements. Thank you. For 6B1, B3, and B4. So we have a unanimous vote. Thank you. Item 6B2, I need to recuse myself. So I will ask Michael to continue with this motion.
Great. So this is case P22032, agenda item 6B2. There is a signed consent agreement. Any discussion on it before we go? Can we have a motion?
I'll move to accept the signed consent agreement for P22032.
I second. Hack.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Kent?
Refrain.
Aye.
And one
abstention. Oh, and one abstention.
One abstention.
Yes. One more on the call?
Oh, Colleen.
Colleen.
And Kent.
Yeah, Kent said aye, and Colleen just said aye.
Okay.
This is Colleen, aye.
Motion. Motion passes.
Okay, that takes care of items 6B, 1 through 4. Let's move on to item 6C, 1. Do we have anybody else here? Doug?
6C1, we're asking for continuance, Mr. Chair.
That's right. Does that take a motion?
Staff could just pen the matter to the next board meeting.
Okay. All right. 6C2, and I believe we have Mr. Phillips. Do we need to call him, Kurt?
Hi, Mr. Chair, I can help with that. I spoke with Mr. Phillips on the phone yesterday. His plan was to attend remotely and address the board. However, he's on the road and asked me just to express his regret that he wasn't able to address the board on this matter.
Okay. Thank you.
But actually, this has changed now to assigned consent. Is that correct?
That's right. I believe signature on the consent agreement occurred after this was agendized as offered, and I do have the signed consent agreement from Mr. Phillips, and I have it with me today.
Okay. Thank you, Judith. We have a signed consent agreement for 6A2. This is P22039. Is there any discussion or questions from the board?
I would like to make a comment.
Okay. Mr. Hack?
This is 6C2. You know, I understand, a little bit of the situation here. I've seen a lot of it. I've actually seen, instead of 9 months, I've seen 4 years, which is unacceptable time for him to get a job done. There should be some leniency in this, only because of it takes 4.5 hours to get up to the job site. He has to do research in another county. And I will say, having experience in those counties, you don't want to leave Maricopa County. Maricopa has the best records. But anyways, other than that, I would move to accept the signed consent order.
Okay.
Second that, Kalika.
Thank you. We have a first and a second. Any other discussion by the board? Okay. We have a first and a second. All those in favor of accepting the signed consent for P22039, please say aye.
Aye.
Colleen?
Aye.
And Kent?
Aye.
We have a unanimous vote. Okay, 6C3. This is case P21058. The respondent, Eduardo Ornelas. Sure, I did not pronounce that correctly. Synopsis of the complaint on February the 21st, 2021. I think that should be 22. The board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after contracting and being paid $3,750 for professional architectural services related to a casita addition at 2831 West Garrett Place in Tucson, Arizona, failed to produce or deliver any professional documents, drawings, or services as specified in the contract, failed to communicate with the client and builder, and subsequently abandoned the project without repayment of funds to the client. It is further alleged that respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of architecture without firm registration with the board. Board records indicate that respondent firm's registration expired on February 1st, 2019, and has not yet been renewed. Mr. Ream, you share some background in this case, please, for the board.
And if I could just start with the date, as you originally stated, is correct. The complaint was received in February of 2021.
Wow.
This is a case that's been assigned to a couple of different investigators. It involved an architect in Pima County that agreed to work on a casita for our ledger in the Tucson, Arizona area, and accepted $3,750, which was essentially half of what the total amount would be. However, after that took place, there were no plans that were ever, up to this time, actually submitted to the alleger in this case. There were some plans after the case was filed that the respondent submitted to the board, but they never ended up in the possession of the alleger, and the Enforcement Advisory Committee assessed the drugs that were submitted to the board, and they were deemed to be not adequate in terms of what's required under the Board's Practice Act. In this particular case, we convened an Enforcement Advisory Committee meeting, and the matter was discussed, and our respondent was in fact part of that and answered questions, and after which the EAC committee substantiated both the allegations. And it was at that time that I lost contact with the respondent. In fact, at that time, he asked me to call him after the EAC meeting was over. I did that, and went to voicemail, and any contacts I made, whether telephonic or through email correspondence, have not been returned. He's just simply separated himself from this. And that's to include the consent agreement. I prepared a consent agreement and sent it to him. However, he has not responded to that. So that's basically where we're at with this case.
Thank you. Board, discussion.
It's unfortunate he's not responding.
I think it's more unfortunate he's not here to present this. I think, having read through this, I think he does have some responsibility here, and I think the administrative penalty is kind of low based on his lack of communication with the board staff and with his client.
I have a question for staff. The $750 administrative penalty, what was the basis of that amount relative to other amounts we've seen on other agenda items?
Well, in preparing this, my position was that our alleger was, in my view, due the $3,750 in restitution, and that's essentially what led me to have a lower administrative penalty, and because I was hopeful that she would receive the money back. So that's basically what my thinking was when I was preparing the consent agreement.
And to this date, she's not received that repayment that you know of?
She has not.
Has he reestablished his firm registration?
He has.
Okay, so he is current?
Yes.
Did he reestablish after this started? So has he been in communication then, at least with the office?
He had, yes, previously. And in fact, it wasn't until the EAC meeting took place that, frankly, I think he was able to figure out kind of where things were headed, essentially by how it went, which is what I think led him to decide to no longer be associated with the case. Because up until that time, there was contact. I spoke with him on the phone, and it wasn't until the EAC meeting met after that is when all contact with him terminated at his choice.
You know, I'm looking at some of the drawings that he put together. They're just rough sketches. Was that to try to get the client to be interested in what he was coming up with?
No, that was for the purposes of just submitting to the board when the complaint was filed. So certainly,
so these weren't submitted to the client for approval?
No.
Apparently the client didn't see anything.
No. Wow. She didn't, and that's what she advised during the Enforcement Advisory Committee, that she hadn't seen any of these.
Yeah, these would be considered conceptual or schematic at best. So definitely not enough.
In the field drawings. Real rough.
I think we need to get the attention of this guy and double the administrative penalty at the very least and go to the 1500.
I would agree with that.
And ask for restitution and everything else in here. And there is, I see a six-month window for this guy to satisfy this suspension or the terms of this agreement. But I don't see, is there an acknowledgement in here within 30 days?
If not, it goes to a hearing.
Okay. Yeah. I want to make sure it goes to a hearing. Okay. Any other discussion on this?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to accept staff recommendation on the consent agreement with the exception of increasing the administrative penalty from $750 to $1,500. And this is for case agenda item 6C3, case P21058.
Okay, we have a motion. Any other discussion?
And not signed within 30 days, move to hearing.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think you said as written.
Yeah, as written, except for increasing the administrative penalty.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Hack. All those in favor of staff recommendation of this to offer consent with the adjustment for the administrative penalty, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay. We have item 6C4
and 5
and 65 that are related. Can we do these together?
Mr. Chair, I recommend you hear them separately.
Okay, thank you. Let's move to 6C4. We'll just follow the order. This is case number P22028. It involves Mr. Reed Dahlbeck. Hope I said that correctly.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Dahlbeck, please come forward.
Good morning.
Good morning. Synopsis of this complaint. On November the 2nd, 2021, after reviewing case number P21072, in which Monica Acuna Arizmendi, non-registrant, was the respondent, the board ordered an investigation into an allegation that between 2019 and 2021, respondent signed and sealed various professional documents related to the practice of engineering and land surveying in and around Santa Cruz County, Arizona, that were prepared by a non-registrant who was not the bona fide employee of the respondent. Mr. Dahlbeck, can you present your position on this case, please?
Okay. This is very quick and very short. First of all, thank you very much for giving me the chance to come here today and speak to you. As you just read the allegations, in 2019, I met Monica through a friend of mine, and this was the very first time I do any work on the site. I have been a government employee for 15 years, and I also teach in Mesa Community College, and I have never done any work on the site before I worked with Monica. I dropped the ball big time when I worked with Monica, and I committed several violations, and I'm here to apologize. I'm very, very sorry, and I feel very embarrassed to, you know, be in this position, and I'm the one who filed the complaint with the board against Monica when I found out that she has been using my signature and seal. Again, I didn't know that I am in violation, quite honestly. I had no idea that what I was doing, you know, that I'm helping someone that is not registered, and I'm not supposed to do that. And I totally understand that my ignorance of the law does not relieve me from my responsibility. I think I should be penalized, and I learned my lesson big time. And thank you very much for straightening me out. But I'm here just to say that I believe the penalty is too severe for me. I'm here to ask the board, if you please can reduce the penalty. The penalty is $5,000 along with the cost of the investigation, which is $400 and something. Again, I believe I should be penalized. This will never happen again. And unfortunately, I didn't even make $5,000 working on these projects with Monica. It wasn't even like $4,000. Again, I'm very sorry. I'm asking the board if you please can consider reducing the amount substantially. I honestly don't have the money. You know, regular state employee, paycheck to paycheck. I would appreciate it if you guys can reduce the fine to a grand or two. That's it.
I presume you ended your relationship with Ms. Arizmendi and MLB Surveying? Mm-hmm. You were never part of the, you were never listed as a principal, as I understand it, even to this day?
What?
Principal of the firm?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No. I'm sorry. I thought that it just normal relation, you know, like I was reviewing the document, I was, you know, redlining them. In a lot of cases, I will get the electronic files, I'll update them the way I want, and I will seal them. And I thought that I'm fine, honestly, because I'm taking responsibility. I have never, you know, just signed something that I did not review or gave her my seal or, you know, and every time I will submit the plans to her, I will give her the plans in PDF and I will flatten them. But nowadays, it's so easy to create a stamp, and I think this is what she did. I think she created my seal in AutoCAD, and you can do it in 5 minutes. You can just draw a circle, put the name, and that's it. And she was signing them electronically the way I do too. But I honestly, and again, I'm the one who filed the complaint. I didn't know that I am in violation.
And I see, I don't question your sincerity here at all. I think, you know, based on prior experience with other situations like this, there are at least 13 or 14 violations here, and the board could be assessing $2,000 apiece. This could be much, much higher. This is a severe situation, and the board historically has taken a pretty strict position on this because you are aiding and abetting a non-registrant. Okay. And because you teach land surveying, I guess I would think
you... I teach the technical part of it,
yeah.
Not the legal.
Discussion by the board.
You know, from what he just described, it kind of sounded like the young lady was a bona fide employee. He was reviewing her work, redlining it, and that's what any registrant would do with someone that was in the same building.
But she was not a bona fide employee.
But he was making it a bona fide. I mean, he was reviewing her work, correcting her work. So you got to give that to him.
Right.
And
but she, and the position is she was not an employee.
And he did bring it to our attention.
Mm-hmm. Understand.
So,
that.
You know, I think we could be lenient.
I would agree with that, Mr. Chair. This is Mike Clicker. You know, given the previous case where we haven't even had any communication from the respondent, we, you know, increased that to $1,500 administrative penalty. Here, Mr. Delbeck is trying to make it right. Obviously, that doesn't excuse the fact that it was wrong, but I think he understands that. Personally, I think it'd be, I would be fine if we were to reduce that to match the previous case, given the efforts that are being done here. Unlike the previous case where there has been no effort to correct the mistakes. That's just my position.
Yeah, I would suggest reducing it to $1,000 for the penalty and keep the 414.
I have a question. There are 13 jobs that were reported, right? How many did you actually review, and how many did she stamp without you reviewing?
Everything she sent me, I reviewed and stamped. If I understand you correctly, she used my seal, or she fraudulent my seal on 7 projects total.
Out of the 13, or additional?
In addition to the
addition. Okay.
But just because the Ward 13 project is a big ward, those were like legal description, elevation certificate, I was charging like $100 here, $200 there. For the drawing, it was $300. I told Mr. Rome that I'm willing to provide all evidence to show that I really did not make that much money. I know that the penalty should not be proportional with how much money you made out of breaking the law. I totally get that. All I'm saying is it wasn't a huge business. I just found the opportunity for something on the side, you know, jumped on it. Thought that there would be a potential for more in the future, but ended up.
So what was the main reason for helping her?
It's just for me just to make
because
money.
Of
honestly, to make money.
Make a couple of bucks.
Yeah,
but it was also a friendship that she had with her?
I honestly did not meet her in person.
Oh, okay.
She's in Tucson.
Okay.
So a friend of mine who's also registered in Lancero Air, he works in construction, and I worked you know, in construction for the government. He met her. He was on a call out to Tucson. And he was working with her on projects, and he was sealing projects for her in Saturday. Okay. And then because he got busy with kids and stuff, he introduced her. He asked me if I'm interested in reviewing, you know, helping her out, and I said fine. I thought that it's a great opportunity. I always wanted to do, you know, stuff on the side. The ultimate goal is to have my own business one day. So we talked on the phone, and this is how she, you know, he's very, very legit person. He said a lot of good things about her. He did not expect her to be this, you know, how to describe her, but. Apparently she has a lot of courage to do what she did. But I think she took advantage of that being a little far out. She knows that I'm Phoenix and she's in Tucson.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. You know, when you get such a distance like that, people are going to say, what do I need him for? I've got to stand.
Exactly. And she knows that I don't go there. And she figured, yes, exactly, that's what happened. Why would I need him for? And especially for the little stuff where she doesn't need my technical help, this is where she started, you know, using my stamp.
So what do you teach in school?
Land survey.
Land survey.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe one of the things you could also do is also instruct your students about the law.
I give a little bit of it in the very first lecture, but then the rest of it, everything is just technical.
Just as a reminder here and there, that would go a long way.
No, I agree.
I actually have a NCEES that actually talks about that. Kind of like doing 40-hour community service. And the guy was in pretty much the same boat. He wasn't a teacher, but he became a teacher. And he had like a certain amount of hours that he had to do. But no, you know, you did violate the law. I would recommend... you know, $1,000 for the penalty and the $414 for administrative.
I want to have Mr. Earl give us his position on this case, please.
I think it would be helpful if I also discuss the related case, P22029. Mr. Perez, in a similar situation with the same person, half as many projects as with Mr. Dahlbeck, and in this particular case, Mr. Perez has signed a consent agreement, and the administrative penalty in this particular case is $3,000. And I bring that to the board's attention because you're deciding this, and I think that you should have that information with respect to what's happened in the related case.
Well, I would say to that, you know, I hear one city claiming that another city charges $40 more a month for utilities. You know, that they need to do that as well. I think that's irrelevant. Of course, we haven't spoken to the other registrants, so, you know, we can't really include pieces in this one. I would just stay with it, whether, you know, he did a, you know. The thing is was there any damage to the public? I would say no. Clearly what you did should be a big embarrassment, but you did bring it to our attention. So I think that's huge.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question. Who did the survey work?
She did.
She did. Is she registered?
No.
So she did the work, you reviewed it, and you sealed it.
Correct.
That's not how it's supposed to work, is it?
No, and that's why, that's the whole issue here. He was stamping a non-registrant's work who's not an employee under his direct supervision.
Well, keep in mind, he was reviewing it for accuracy. And
understood.
So, yeah, but this. I mean, that is, the only difference of what he had is someone actually had an office that they all met in the morning.
No, but he wasn't,
He wasn't under contract.
He's not the client. I mean, yeah. He's not working directly.
Well, that's the other case, the survey.
But I think
she is an EIT, too.
And Mr. Rome, I understand she was registered but lost her registration. Did I read that correctly?
No, there wasn't any registration. She just had a designation as an engineer in training.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a registration as such.
Okay.
If you're an EIT, you're technically registered, but you're not a professional registrant. Just
okay. So what action can be taken against her if she's an EIT?
Well, we've already settled that last month. She was charged like $13,000.
I think Mr. Clayton brings up a good point that we have a subsequent question. Mr. Rohn did it, actually. I'm sorry. We have a fine assessed coming up that Mr. Perez has already agreed to at $3,000. Those cases are virtually identical, and it's hard to backtrack on this one and not be consistent and fair to both. I mean, we could give a break to some degree. Maybe it goes down to 20 by 100, but I don't know that we should reduce it too much just to keep it fair with Mr. Perez.
What about previous cases in a similar situation? What has the fine been in those cases?
I don't think you get anything from that.
It's very dramatically based on how they respond to staff.
Right.
Have they been willing to resolve the issue expediently versus just being difficult? In this case, I appreciate you coming forward and admitting the problem. I don't expect to ever see you again based on your position. But I think to be fair and consistent, I'm going to suggest 2,500 as a settlement, but I guess I want this over for discussion with the board.
I'll support that.
When you're saying 2,500, 2,500 for the administrative and then still the cost of investigation.
Correct.
Right.
Shy of 3,000.
Mr. Chair, if I may, it is always a balancing test between the board wanting to be consistent in performance of its function so it can't be accused of being arbitrary or capricious, and then also considering the individual aspects of each case, obviously. So it may be, as staff, when designing these agreements, looks at the past performance of the board and also looks at the specifics of the case and, again, related cases, it may be beneficial for the board to enunciate the basis for reducing the fine, just so the record is clear for why that would be getting reduced.
Statutes or the rules, it's where it says that you can charge up to $2,000 per incident. Is it a may or a shall?
Oh, it's may. You may charge up to $2,000, but if you've been doing it.
Right. So, I mean, you know, the act is equal to all of them. You know, I mean, whether it's 13, 20 cases, I mean, there's one problem. And, I just say we finally go with the 1,500 pump up.
So just if I may then, so you would be suggesting that in the future the board charge one penalty regardless of how many actual violations?
No, it's the situation. I mean, the gal sounds like she knows what she's doing. Get clients. I mean, that's actually pretty good. I know companies that I've worked at would love to hire and make a deal with her because she can bring the clients in and stuff. But, you know, in his situation, it's an embarrassment. It really is for many reasons. But he did bring the case to the board. It's like, you know, she took the wrong course, and he brought it to our attention. He, at that point, realized he can't trust her. So I think that was probably a big learning lesson there. But
Mr. Glicka?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, in response to Scott's question as to, or the rationale for it, the reason that I'm proposing something less than what was noted here is specifically because Mr. Dalbeck has brought this. He came forward and actually admitted that it was a mistake. He's trying to make right. That doesn't negate what was done before, but I think that is the reason why I'm proposing this for the record, is because it was a self-admitted a situation. He didn't have to do that, but he did. So that's why I stand behind reducing the penalty. How much, I guess, will be the question. We have a 2,500, 1,500.
Well, we can
he
add them
for,
together.
He asked for 2,500. He proposed that. 2,500. So I would support that.
I heard at most 2,000.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I said 1,000 or two.
Yeah. I think you said 1,000 or 2,000.
I said 1,000 or two.
So maybe it's too premature if we will still want to discuss numbers, but I would move to reduce the administrative penalty to 1,500, keeping the cost of investigation as it is. And the basis for reducing that would be primarily his candor in bringing this forward, his understanding of what he has done wrong, and his kind of testimony or statement here today, and kind of this individual situation of his sincerity, of his embarrassment and wanting to make things right.
Just to clarify, on December 15, 2021, respondent requests a reduction to $2,500. That's what it stays here.
So, Stacy's made that motion, and included in that is keeping the consent as written, except for the decrease in administrative.
Correct. All other items would remain the same as recommended by staff.
So there is a motion. And we have a second.
I'll second that.
To reduce what amount, I'm sorry?
Reduce it to 1,500.
I'm going to take that second as half.
I called it first.
Okay. You got it. Let's do roll call, please. Yeah. Kurt?
Okay. Jack Gilmore.
Nay.
Helmut Hack.
Which one are we doing?
Michael Kolecki.
Aye.
6C4.
Colleen Lindgren.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Noel.
Aye.
Stacy Skanky.
Aye.
Kent Wilson.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Dalbeck, thanks for coming in. Appreciate your interest and your candor here. And hope to never see you here again.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item 6C4. This is a related case involving Mr. William Perez. Or C5, I'm sorry. This is case number P22029. We have a signed consent agreement. Mr. Ream, do you want to? This is really a duplicate case, same situation, just a previous time period. Not as many violations. There were only, six?
Yes.
And Ms. Perez instructed Monica that she wanted to end his relationship with the firm, but he didn't instruct staff or notify you guys what was going on. So, we do have a signed consent. Is there any discussion by the board? Mr. Room, do you want to quickly review this for the board?
Well, I think part of this issue involves, again, the same non-registrant, Ms. Monica Arizmendi. During the course of the investigation with Mr. Perez, who furnished all of the evidence, I didn't have anything, frankly, without him, and he quickly and voluntarily surrendered quite a few documents and materials. And during the course of that, I discovered that Ms. Arizmendi, who was previously investigated with respect to her conduct with Mr. Dalbeck, was doing land survey work with Mr. Perez, and the evidence supports that, and that's not something that we have previously investigated and looked into in any regard, because I didn't have a specific allegation as such or evidence, which I did receive by Mr. Perez. That wasn't the intent. The intent was I was investigating him, but the same thing happened on the other side. When I was investigating Ms. Arizmendi, this information came to light with respect to our two registrants, Mr. Perez and Mr. Dahlbeck. Now, the opposite has happened, that during the investigation of Mr. Perez, I have this evidence that Ms. Arizmendi was doing essentially the same thing during a different time period and with a different individual. However, it's something that hasn't been dealt with by the board or even investigated, and that's one of the recommendations I have, is that take place as well.
So what is the signed consent order? What's the amount?
It's a $3,000 administrative penalty, and so the cost of investigation is $662. And there's also a state suspension and probation associated with that.
Yeah. Kurt, is Mr. Perez here?
Mr. Perez, are you on the line?
Actually, I received an email from Mr. Perez just moments before the meeting began, and he has associated issues with family and that kind of thing that I'll leave at that. And his intention was to attend remotely and address the board. However, because of the issues that recent events, including this morning, he's not able to address the board. So that was his intent. However, he's not available this morning.
That being said, he has signed the consent that was proposed.
He has signed it, and I do have it here.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on this item?
Who brought the complaint forward? Because I don't see that here in the case information.
The board actually,
the last case brought it forward, which revealed this one.
So this individual didn't come forward and admit wrongdoing as the previous case was.
No.
So, okay. I'm just trying to be consistent with our administrative penalties. And again, like we said in the previous case, because that respondent did admit to wrongdoing, I can see the case being reduced. In this case, since that was not the situation, I think that the $3,000 administrative penalty is justified based on staff recommendation. Again, because I just want to make sure for the record that we're consistent with how we are treating these situations.
Yeah, I would include one more. I'd like to know what those surveys look like. Dangerous having bad stuff out there. But I guess that's probably impossible to get our hands on those. But I would agree with the 3,000 at least.
Mr. Chair,
any other discussion on this? A motion?
I have a question. You noted wanting to know what the surveys are like. Didn't a registered land surveyor review them and seal them? Or she sealed them?
Supposedly someone reviewed them.
Oh, he didn't, though.
I don't know.
The case against him if he didn't review anything?
I have no idea.
The associated documents were elevation certificates in this particular case with Mr. Perez. Those were the documents that he ultimately sealed upon
elevation certificates.
Elevation certificates.
But he used his own company, which is not registered. That's what's on those certificates, and not hers. And I think that's part of the issue here.
Right.
So, any other discussion? Is that clear, Mr. Mead?
Yeah, that's all I have to.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to accept the consent agreement for agenda item 6C5, case number P22029, as written.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett.
We'll second.
Second? We have a first and a second. All those in favor of accepting the consent agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
And Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Thank you, Mr. Ream.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question regarding Monica Acuna?
Sure.
She's got an EIT. She seems like to be the source of a lot of problems. Is there something we can do with respect to her EIT or when she wants to become registered?
I think we've already done the case.
We did her case in November, But if she ever comes forward, then...
To get the registration.
Well, then, yeah.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Okay.
And of course, I should add that the other related issue was with Ms. Arizmendi and an investigation that with regard to what happened with Mr. Perez. And there hasn't been any discussion by the board with regard to that issue. Whether, in fact, we initiate an investigation into that particular issue, because that hasn't been previously investigated.
So are we, is the board satisfied with the results to date?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
So she's just under investigation for one case, which is actually two different surveyors are getting stuck for what she's driving.
Right. That case in November, her 07-21-072, I think.
That was specific to Mr. Dalba. So this issue with Mr. Perez was under a different time frame, and it wasn't previously investigated. And the evidence provided by Mr. Perez certainly established that this line survey work was occurring at a different period of time with a different registrant, and it hasn't been addressed by the board. It hasn't been addressed by our enforcement section.
But P210072 was the case we've already addressed it here, for Monica Acuna Arizmendi.
Specific to...
And we cited her and issued that big penalty.
Just for one.
Just for one case, though. Yeah. But still, they were related.
No.
I thought there was clear that there were these two surveyors involved.
Mr. Perez was the person who registered the firm for her so that she had that. However, there wasn't anything that I had at any time that she was... Ms. Arizmendi was doing land survey work with Mr. Perez. I had none of that before me at that time, and only recovered that during the course of the investigation with Mr. Perez, and now I have that, and it hasn't been addressed.
Okay.
So, other than the name, which led the board to direct staff to investigate Mr. Perez, but at that time, they didn't have any other information.
But I think the board is satisfied that with this consent agreement, Mr. Perez has admitted his problem in this case. So I presume we're satisfied.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, okay. Not necessarily. I mean, the record shows with her just one problem, which is actually two. So when she comes up, maybe for registration, we at least have a clear record saying this has happened twice. It's not maybe it happened once and she didn't know about it.
Right.
It's happened twice.
And that's my recommendation to the board, simply that we initiate an investigation with respect to what happened and with regard to Mr. Perez and the land survey work she was doing with him, which, again, has not been addressed at this point.
Okay. So is there a recommendation then to initiate this investigation?
I mean, I would say yes, but hopefully it wouldn't take much to do it. I mean, I think you already know what the answer is. Maybe it's putting the files together, I suppose. But
It would be a quick and easy, simple. The evidence is already in place, so it wouldn't take long at all to put the case together and bring back before the board.
Since it's not agendized, can't do that.
We can only really discuss this in the context of Mr. Perez's case, which is agendized, so we're beginning to get into an analysis of her case, which would be a great topic for next month.
Yeah, right, because we need to put it on the agenda to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we had our opportunity last month, and we made a decision, and we probably should just live with it.
No, but we did.
Comes
we
back,
didn't have the second situation.
Well, then that's on us.
No,
can't dragging us on.
It wasn't available at that time.
But
so well, then it shouldn't have come before the board.
And it really may be best at this point to end this discussion to next month for staff to be able to get all the relevant information from the board packet in order to discuss Ms. Acuna's situation.
So let's do that for next month, and you'll bring it back, and then we can decide at that time if we want to initiate an investigation.
We can do that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, that completes the six C's. Let's move on to 6D1. We got, we can do 6D2. Is Catherine Mills on the phone? We're supposed to call her in.
She's for 6D2. Would you like to go to that?
No, if she's not here on the phone. She's not on the phone. Let's go ahead and do 61.
Ms. Mills, are you online?
Okay. 61. This is case number P22035 involving Tamara Caraway, architect with Abbott Architects. On November the 4th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of engineering without registration as an engineering firm and without registered engineers on staff. Okay, Mr. Kramer, can you give us some background here, please?
Yeah, so this alleger, for whatever reason, was searching through firms and noticed that this firm was advertising on their webpage engineering work and didn't have a registered engineer on staff, therefore the complaint. In the past, we've had similar cases over the years, but it involved a project. It involved somebody getting paid. It was contracted. Like Dr. Angel always said, follow the money. In this case, there is no money. There is no project other than it's just an advertisement. So the question that staff has with the board is this firm allowed to, being a registered architectural firm and the principal of a registered architect, are they able to advertise for engineering work? And you can see her response, the principal's, Ms. Caraway, in the packet. And if then I would also refer to ARS 32143, which is the exemptions clause for architect, geologist, engineers, and landscape architects that they can cross.
Incidental.
Yes, they can cross paths. So that's my question to you guys. Can they advertise without having a registered engineer?
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. King. Yes.
When you talk about crossing paths, I mean, that happens all the time. But they're not advertising that they can do engineering or other things. It's incidental. It happens. They bring somebody in to help them. And I think in this case, they're advertising that they can do engineering work. Theoretically, they can't. They got to bring somebody in to do it. So this is more of a preemptive statement on the board's part, maybe some sort of letter saying you can't do it this way.
Yeah, it has to be articulated for the health, safety, welfare.
The problem hasn't happened yet, but if they take the next step, there would be a problem, or there could be a problem.
Was she, in your discussions with her, was she willing to change how she advertises her business on her website?
Well, I'm sure if the board directed her to, she would.
Because I think that's what's important is to understand they could say that they have relationships with other engineers that can work with them under their main contract with the client, but be clear that that work is being done not as incidental but as an actual consultant. You know, and I think that's where it just needs to be clear that that's not. Yeah. And I looked at the website too. I was like, yeah, I would think, oh, they've got engineers on staff, and they don't. So that would be my concern.
So they're registered architects, the firm, but not registered engineering firm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we're not, can we just issue, I don't think this rises to a level of complete investigation. I think just issue a letter.
If I could just add just a thought. So since she is a registered architect and her firm is registered as an architectural firm, if I could just point you to ARS 32141 that discusses firm registration. Firms shall not engage in the practice of any board regulated profession or occupation unless the firm is registered with the board and the professional services are conducted under the full authority and responsible charge of a principal of the firm who is also a registrant. So you can't simply just direct staff to call this person and say you should change your website or something. If you felt sufficient need, you could issue direct board staff to issue perhaps a letter of concern that's non-disciplinary.
That's fine.
Citing, yeah, and that's where I was going. Yeah, I agree.
The statute there to show that if she is going to advertise engineering services,
she needs to comply
have
with
a responsible engineer.
Yeah, it needs to be clear that she's not doing
firm.
That. but she can get the help if needed.
If I can clarify also, when somebody enters in their firm registration, you have to check all the boxes of what services that you're offering. For each service you check off, you need a principal who's a registrant that can perform the services to sign off as the principal.
In that profession.
Yeah, but she's on file, she's listed as just an architect.
Correct.
So clearly she's not offering anything else. Only the business is offering that we can provide these other services.
It's her business.
But it's by consultant, and that's what the website needs to state.
Or just...
It needs to be clarified that she is not, but she can have consultants available.
Yeah, I mean, in my 20 years of doing this, I've never on any of my websites, our main website or whatnot, have ever said, yeah, we can do all this stuff. We have consultants that can do it. I mean, that's kind of... That's obvious, you know. It's like, I just think it'd be better just take that off the website completely, or make it very clear what that relationship with those consulting firms is. That would be what I would suggest as part of
it. We could have a letter of concern quoting that item, that whole paragraph, whatever it was.
Yeah, there's something about advertising and that.
Yeah. You can't do it.
I'm going to make a motion for that.
Yeah, please.
I'd like to make Ms. Kalika make a motion for agenda item 6D1, case P22035, to issue a letter of concern based on what Judith has articulated as far as the requirements to comply with ARS
32141.
Thank you.
Advertising.
Relative to advertising for services not covered under their firm registration.
Yeah, I think her letter was pretty clear that she understood that, but obviously the website didn't say that. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second. McAllister.
Thank you. All those in favor of issuing the letter of
concern.
Sorry. Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
Thank you. Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay. Item 6D2. This is case number P22021 involving respondent Catherine Mills. Synopsis of the complaint. The board received on October the 8th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging the respondent, after being contracted for septic system testing, design, and permitting at 18448 East Chandler Heights Road in Queen Creek, Arizona, on or about September the 15th, 2021, failed to deliver professional services and has abandoned the client's project. Who's Carthel?
So Mr. Carthel couldn't be here today. He had unexpected issue, but
okay.
We have our enforcement manager, Doug Parlin, that is willing to jump in and answer.
Ms. Parlin, can you share the board your staff's position on this, please?
I was going to say, would you like me to call Ms. Mills?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
The alleger was refunded the money.
Yes.
Ms. Mills, this is Kurt Winter, the AZBTR. Star 6 to unmute yourself. We're in the board meeting. I think she just hung up on me.
Well,
wrong button.
That makes her position clear. You want to call her again, Kurt?
I will call her again. Now, coming from our state phone, sometimes it looks like it could be a spam call. I don't know what it looks like. Ms. Mills, this is Kurt Winter at the AZBTR. Are you able to join the board meeting today? Star 6 to unmute yourself.
Yes, I am. Yeah, sorry, I thought it was spam the first time it called.
No worries, it's not the first time.
Ms. Mills, this is Jack Gilmore, and the board is hearing the complaint that was assessed against you. We just reviewed the complaint, and I wanted to see if you would share with the board your position on this.
So this is that we didn't get his testing done in the time that he thought, and he thought we had abandoned this project because we didn't hear anything back. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, and we did not get back to him, so I can understand why he thought that. So we had not abandoned the project, and so as soon as I got that complaint, I refunded his money. So.
Okay. Ms. Parlin, can you share the staff's position on this, please?
Well, unfortunately, Ms. Mills has been a frequent flyer with the board, and the issues that we've had in the past are very similar to the issues that we see with this complaint. This complaint on its own, the time frames here are much narrower than anything we've seen in the past, and she did refund the money. But I think it's important to bring to the board's attention that this is a recurring problem.
Ms. Mills, I think Mr. Parlin's kind of indicating what we've all realized in review of this case, that you've been here three times for some communication issues. I understand, reading through this, that this was just a total of a four-week turnaround from the time that you were contracted to the time that you returned his money. And there were some issues involving the soil testing on site. So, based on what the market's doing right now, I can understand the short period, but your client was obviously frustrated and there was a lack of communication. I want to open this for discussion with the board.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Mr. Kleck.
I'd like to address Ms. Mills. So, Ms. Mills, what are you doing now to kind of help improve, or are you doing anything to help improve communication between yourself and your clients? Obviously, that's been a previous concern of the board, as Mr. Gilmore mentioned, and we just would like to hear what you're doing to help improve communication in that department.
So I have two staff members that I'm assigning particular clients so that they will check with them once a week and make sure everything's going okay. And along with that, report to them status of their projects. And then I also have a new person that just came on board helping with administrative things, and they're going to help me with checking messages and making sure we get back to everybody.
Thank you.
So the issue here, does this rise to the level of gross negligence? I don't see that, but I guess I want to get a chance for the other board members to share their opinion on this.
Well, you know, business is business. Either you make it, either you make it or you go bust. And that's pretty much the situation I see here. You know, it's pretty much on her. It's not really something that the board should be trying to control. I mean, we're not a nanny state, I guess, but or don't want to be. She has returned the money. Sounds like she's making some corrections, but there's really nothing here that she's violated any rules that I've seen.
Yeah, I think if we have to look at it from
it's administration on her part, and that's not what she was tested or licensed for, so we need to keep it to that. So I would move to dismiss.
Yeah, I think if it doesn't rise to the level of gross negligence, yeah. Which we'll look at counsel to provide any input there, but
gross negligence will be a pretty high legal standard. It's substantially above regular negligence in performance.
So based on that, I would also I don't see us being able to take action here.
No, if we could, I think we could probably go after a bunch of politicians.
Okay, we've got discussion involving dismissal. Is there a motion?
May I interject?
Who's speaking?
This is Kent.
Oh, Kent, sure. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I do think an important part of our charge is to protect the public, and you know, while it doesn't direct her license per se, it is important for us to take into consideration that, you know, responding to doing things appropriately in a professional manner is part of the entire package of being licensed by the state. And so, you know, I'm okay, you know, at the stage of here that it's gotten to the level to warrant action, but I would just put that it is important for us to consider that, you know, we are to protect the public, and part of that is, you know, looking at these things, and if they're not doing things appropriately, then to take action.
Ted, I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that too. The problem is, I mean, you asked a good question. I think she responded well that she is making changes. There's nothing really the board can do to try to send her off to take a course at some school. They just don't teach that. A lot of the stuff you have to learn as you're doing it. And, you know, and if you're losing clients, you're going to be out of business eventually. And that's usually how the market works.
Thank you, Ms. Jack. I think in a previous case, there was an ethics class requirement. But in this case, again, I see the 4-week turnaround and the status of the market and her conflicts with getting the soil testing scheduled with another subcontractor as part of the issue. But it still comes back to the fact that there should have been better communication with the client. So I could support either letter of concern or dismissal.
I guess given the short time frame of this case, I don't know if a letter of concern is warranted.
So many other previous cases, I would agree.
Yeah, but you're right.
Based on the precedent and the fact we've got three other cases related to poor communication, I think it's warrants at least a letter of concern.
I could go with that.
Kent?
Yes, I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
What will the letter say? I guess, what would it say?
I think the letter of concern needs to address the fact that as a registrant, we're responsible for communication with our clients. And even though this is a short turnaround, I think it's still incumbent upon the registrant to communicate with the client if there are anticipated delays. In this case, it's a pretty short period. But had this not been a recurring problem, I'd probably support a dismissal. But in this case, I think letter of concern is non-disciplinary, and I think it's appropriate. So I think the letter of concern really should address the fact that we need to encourage our respondents to maintain communication, especially if there are conflicts with the schedule. And I think that's
communication and be responsive.
And business ethics.
Yeah. So I'll make that motion. Is there a second?
I'll second. Kalika.
Thank you. All those in favor of issuing a letter of concern to Ms. Mills, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Kent?
Aye.
And Colleen?
Nay.
Okay, we have almost one nay. Kurt? Ms. Mills, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think that ends our D's.
All right, then I'll hang up. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just going to suggest that. Let's take a break here for 10 minutes. Okay. It is 10:25. Let's be back in 10 minutes. 10:35.
We are now recording.
Thank you, Kurt. The board's back in session. It's 10:36. We're on item 10B1. This involves the Home Inspection Rules and Standards Committee. It's time we need to appoint another member of this committee to stagger through your term. And I understand we have four. Two inspectors.
So how it's agendized right now, basically there's staggered 3-year terms for the home inspector members of the home inspector rules and standards committee. Currently, one is expiring this month and one expired last January, but we never brought before the board to make that appointment. So today you have two agenda items, the first being the 2021 to 2024 home inspector position. And then the other one is a small county, which is a little different, where they must come from a county that has less than 400,000 persons.
And that's item B2.
Correct.
Okay.
So I would suggest that if you want to tackle maybe just the first one, discuss with the individuals of that position and then make your determination on that one before going to the second. Or you can talk to all 8 of them, or the number that are here, and then make your two choices. Up to you.
No, I think we'll do them separately. I think it makes sense. And we've got 4 to choose from for this first at-large committee.
Give me a second here. I'm going to bring up my...
Are you calling in anybody?
I might be. One second. So we had a gentleman named Clark Booth, but he had to rescind his application just to personal reasons. We have Daryl Penn. Is Mr. Penn here? I do not have a call information for Mr. Penn. Mr. Smith, who's here in the audience. And then Mr. Steron, who is currently sitting on the committee in that 2021-2024 position. He indicated he would be remote. Paul, are you online?
Yes, this is Paul Steron.
Okay, so it seems to me, I'll have to look to see if I can find Mr. Penn's call-in information, but if you would like, you can speak with Mr. Smith and Mr. Steron.
Okay. All right. Mr. Steron, are you here?
He's on the phone.
Oh, he's on the phone.
Yes. Yes, I am present.
Thank you for calling in. Can you share with the board a little bit of your background and your interest in participating as a board member, please?
Committee member.
Well, I'm happy to.
Committee member, sorry.
I'd like to thank the board. I'm sorry. I would like to thank the board for their time, and I have been involved with the licensure of home inspectors since the birth in the year 2000. I was involved in the first EAC committees, and I served for 10 years on the BTR's EAC for home inspectors. I've more recently been involved with the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee for the last 3 years, and I have enjoyed that volunteering and bringing some of my expertise from my 28 years in the profession to assist with the home inspectors in Arizona. We are in the middle of a pretty large project right now, that being updates and changes to our home inspector standards of practice for Arizona home inspectors. It's a major project, and of course, the name of the committee is the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee. So we're working on standards that are right at the heart of what we do. I'm an integral part of that, and I would like to stay on for an additional 3-year term to help complete that large project. And that's my biggest interest in trying to stay on for an additional term. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, would you like to address the board?
Yes. Thank you. You all got my letter of intent, all that, so I don't know if I need to review it, but I've been doing home inspections for 20 years, also a commercial pilot for American Airlines, and due to COVID, I took the early out retirement, so I've got a little more time to put in to the business here and to also committee. In 2005, I started Kaplan Professional Schools. I did the home inspection school there, the training. They shut the door in 2008. I started up Inspection Training of Arizona. And so I've been teaching for, 18 years here. What's the math there? Yeah, about 18 years. And I brought to the attention of the committee several times, starting about 10 years ago, that there needs to be a little more attention to education for licensing, because that is a big portion of this rules committee. And I also sit on the EAC committee, so I see a lot of violations. And it appears that, I would say 90% of the violations are problems with report writing, not following the standards. So I've asked the committee several times if we could just train parallel inspectors, because you have to do 30 parallels to be licensed, and train them how to do parallels. I did an EAC meeting 2 months ago. The inspector, he resigned after that, but he's been doing inspections for a long time, and he's been doing parallel inspections. And we found so many problems with his report as far as meeting the standards. And then he also brought up the point that he's just trained three inspectors, and they were using his software, which lacked all of the appropriate materials. So there's a problem in the whole training process. So I'd like to help with that, and I think I could provide a lot of insight to the training part, and that's my goal. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I'm going to call Mr. Penn and just
get
a little bit. Mr. Penn, this is Kurt Winter at the board meeting regarding the HIRS positions. Are you available to talk? Star 6 to unmute.
Oh, yes, I can.
All right.
Ms. Penn, this is Jack Gilmore. I'm the board chair. I understand you're interested in serving on this committee. Can you share your interest in serving? A little bit of your background.
Yes, I can. Yeah, yes, no problem. So, starting off with the background, I have been dealing with property for over 19 years in multiple aspects. So starting off with insurance claims, liability, and then transferred over to the home inspection sector, and then transferred into the building sector. So my interest stems from just it's a little noise in the background. I don't know if it's my phone or not, so if it is, I apologize. But my interest stems from just the overall outlook of the home inspection process right now. And I really appreciate the field that we're in, and I see areas for improvement. And I know, you can say that about any occupation, any career, but I do see areas for improvement. On the real estate side, when I'm dealing with transactions, I see a lot of inconsistencies with home inspection reports, void information, omitted information, that's required throughout the home inspection reporting process. And I just think that I have a lot to add to the table as far as recommendations. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel or anything, but I think that there can be some process improvements. I've dealt with Six Sigma, so I'm pretty familiar with that. And I've had a lot of great mentors in my life that helped me with things. So I think that what I can bring to the table and help incorporate will have a significant impact on our industry.
Okay. Thank you for your interest here. And Mr. Booth is withdrawn.
Yeah, correct. And at this time, since we do have Mr. Penn and Mr. Stair on the phone, I don't know if you want to open any questions from the board.
Yeah, I'm just going to do that next, but there's no one else.
No.
Okay. We've got these three gentlemen that want to serve on this committee for home inspectors. Credentials are pretty impressive for all three. I'll open it up to the board. You got questions for these guys? Or?
How are you?
And that's always the problem. These guys are so good. It'd be nice to get all three of you guys on there, but we can't.
How many do we have spots for?
We've got three people that are on, want to serve on this board. We've only got room for one. So we have to make a selection of the three.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may, maybe one question would be, what would be one initiative or improvement, I guess, to the committee that each of these three applicants would be interested in putting forth? Maybe that would be something worth hearing.
Great. Great question. Let's start with, we'll go in order. Mr. Stern, did you hear that question?
I did. Thank you. And I'm happy to respond. One of the important things that we do have as part of the licensure is the exam. And our NHIE, the National Home Inspection Exam, is what we have for our state exam, our state licensing here. And so one of the upcoming activities is going to be a role delineation study where the home inspection profession is studied nationally to define it, and then the exam questions emanate from what makes up that job analysis, if you will. And so that's going to be happening over the next several years. We want to make sure that Arizona is part of that, and I do plan on being part of that and representing Arizona. I served on the board of directors for the Examination Board of Professional Home Inspectors for 6 years, and I served 2 years as president of that exam board. And so I do have a good connection back to the exam board. That is an important resource that I'm providing to the BTR. The other thing, quickly, lastly, is the standards project. There's a lot of moving parts on it. I've enlisted the support of national experts, including the immediate past president of ASHI, the American Society of Home Inspectors. So there is some continuity there. I do feel good about the two other candidates, frankly, and I'm happy to see skilled folks like these two come in and offer to assist, and if it's the board's decision to have them assist, I'm sure they would do fine with it. But I do, this is one of my last initiatives that I think I'd like to provide to the state before I do kind of hang up my volunteer hat here a little bit, and it I would offer to do that and help cap off some of my national or state volunteer work with this position.
Okay, thank you for your insight there. Mr. Smith.
Like I stated in my letter of interest, I think there's, we just became reclassified from a occupation to profession, and that happened a couple years ago. Now that we're considered professional, I think we need to really take the educational part a little more serious. I would say, like, maybe a newsletter at the end of the year stating what changes may have been made to the standards. So far, they haven't done that. Maybe additional education, like continuing ed as a professional, something like that. Just so the inspectors know, because I know we could probably eliminate a lot of these EAC issues just by further communication.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Penn?
Okay, so the way that I'm looking at it, I agree with both parties. I do a lot with E&O. I've been doing E&O claims as well. And one thing that I notice when I'm dealing with inspectors is the fact that they don't really have a full understanding of the inspection process. So I think it goes back to both correcting the way that the exam is written and also ensuring that when people are doing parallels, they really are... prospective home inspectors are completing the parallels, they really understand what they're doing, because from what I'm seeing, they're committing first, and then they're trying to figure out the rest later, which has a negative impact on the industry. So I think that if we do correct the overall way that the test is written, and then we also correct the way that parallels are introduced and executed, then we'll have a better outcome.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any other questions from the board? to these gentlemen?
What is a parallel?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Peter.
I'm Peter Leeds. I've been on the Rules and Standards, Home Inspector's Rules and Standards Committee since 2000. I feel old. Parallel inspection is a very important part of this process. In order for a home inspector to get certified, he has to accomplish all three legs of the three-legged stool. One being the education, he's got to take his 48 hours now of training. He has to pass the national exam, which Mr. Starin has talked about, and has been going on for many years. And also, he has to do what we call 30 parallel inspections. And a parallel inspection is when he goes out with another certified home inspector who meets the parallel inspector qualifications, which we've identified, and writes 30 reports that meet the standards. Those reports are then corrected, supposedly, and of course we fight about this all the time, but supposedly corrected by the parallel inspector until they're right. And then once he does 30 of them, he submits his best, hopefully his best, to the state board for his certification.
One of the biggest problems is in the 30 parallel.
A big problem is in the 30 parallel inspections. Like Mr. Penn was saying, they seem to want to shoot from the hip very often. We've been addressing this problem for years in the committee. We do have a minimum standard. We can't bring our standards up to what Mr. Penn would like it to be because it is a state minimum standard. As a home inspector grows, he learns to do it much better, and therefore he does learn in the field. I want to give a comment on the gentleman that I've listened to. I am a sitting member on the Rules and Standards Committee right now, the only one who's not up for reappointment. The gentlemen that we have, Paul Starin and David Schwartz, who we'll be talking about next, are very, very good at what they do. They've been with the committee for many, many years, and I have no problems with your deciding to reinstate either one of them. The gentlemen that I listened to today, both are, as you said, very, very good, very educated, with great ideas. Education is a good idea. Trying to clean up our parallel inspections is a good idea. So as a member of the committee who's concerned and here only today to see where this committee is going to, I have no problems with either one of those gentlemen either. So if I can't really give you any input except to say that we are in the middle of, not in the middle, we're at the very end of completing some standards revisions, and we expect to get them finished in February. And with those revisions, it would be nice to be able to approve and get them to you and to GIRC, of course, with the committee that has created those. So if I had to choose as a member of the committee, I am interested in keeping the committee as sound as it was last week. Thank you. And I hope I answered your question on parallel.
You did.
Okay.
And it seems pretty scary with the 30 parallels that you can teach whatever you want in class, but when you get out and actually do it, that's when it falls flat.
It is. And but the biggest problem we're having with parallel inspections is the parallel inspector. So we have gone through great pains to make his qualifications a little better, and we got all of that approved. But the trouble is the parallel. We're still seeing parallel inspectors that are not reviewing the reports. The rule was, and the intention is, to do a parallel inspection.
Mr. Leeds, I apologize for bursting in, but we're getting much more into committee business, and this is just a new member.
Thanks, Peter.
Mr. Donald.
The cattle prod is kind of important. I'd like to, again, appreciate everyone's interest. The credentials are impressive. I think we need to decide amongst the board which one of these three gentlemen we want to see continue or be appointed as new members of the committee.
Would we be able to do a roll call, and then each board member would
piece of paper
offer their
secret ballot.
Suggestion, and then majority wins? Is that a reasonable way to do that?
Or else we just make a motion on one of the three and then see if we get a majority?
If it also passes.
Okay. That works too.
What if we get two passes? We only have one spot.
We got one, yeah, three candidates for one spot.
Right.
So.
Well, once one passes, that would end the.
Right.
That would end the agenda. Yeah.
So it'd be incumbent on whoever makes the motion to.
Yeah.
To lead that effort.
And if it doesn't pass, then we go to the next favorite person for a vote.
Okay.
Two spots. I'm waiting around if you want me to.
Yeah.
Or do we do maybe one, two, three, and for each one to select number one, number two, number three pick?
Have you guys done this before?
Someone proposes a name, and you vote.
Okay. All right.
I just went through the resumes and seemed like Mrs. Terrence got the most experience, about 27 years experience.
Well, and his current position on the board, even though this is a tough decision because there's two other very, very well-qualified candidates here as well, and I don't want to not emphasize that as well, but I agree. I think Mr. Sterin, because of his current work with the board, the good working relationship with the committee, and the current relationship with the committee, I feel that he's probably the most qualified, even though the other two are also very close seconds. So.
Okay, there was a motion for Mr. Sterin to be selected. Is there a second?
I didn't actually motion, but I can.
I
was having a discussion. Oh. I wasn't actually making a motion,
sorry.
But I'll happily do that. So I will make a motion to reappoint Paul Sterin to the HIRSC, or the Home Inspectors Rules and Standards Committee, for another 3-year term.
I second, McCallum.
Okay, we have a motion, a first and a second.
Just to clarify, it would be he's going to be just doing the 2 years. It's 2021 to 2024, so he's gone over a year.
He's 1 year into
I'm sorry. Okay,
right now,
so the term would end in 2024.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
We just didn't do this last
year.
We'll
make a point of doing every January.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All those. Let's do a roll call.
Okay. All right, Jack Gilmore.
I'm going to support that, and I respect Peter's recommendation based on the continuity and their effort right now to get through a new rules change, so I think that's important. Mr. Smith, Mr. Penn, I'm impressed with your credentials and hope you maintain your interest, because there will be other opportunities coming forward. So that was my, sorry.
Thank you. Expanded.
Helmut Hack?
Aye.
Michael Kaleka?
Aye.
Killeen Lindgren?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Stephen Noel?
Aye.
Stacey Skanky?
Nay, and if I can just comment, just because I do think he's incredibly qualified, as are all the applicants. I just prefer a change and a constant change of new individuals to be able to serve. So for that reason, nay.
Very good. And Kent Wilson.
Kent?
Does that count as an abstention?
I'm going to count him as absent then in the vote. And so that's motion carried.
Motion carries. Mr. Sterin, you're appointed to the committee for another 2 years. Again, Mr. Smith, thanks for coming in.
Oh, sure.
Appreciate that. And Mr. Finn,
thank you all.
Your as well.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, next item. This is same committee, but this is the small county position. Kurt, can you give us just a quick overview of what's going on here?
So this is going to be for the 3 terms. It expires this January. And let me get to I have 2 call-ins. So we have a Mr. DeMitt will be called, Mr. Pacino, who will be called, Mr. Skaggs, who's in the audience, and then we should have David Schwartz. Mr. Schwartz, are you online? It doesn't sound like it, but I can also give him a call too.
So, Kurt, how many positions is this?
This is the last position. This is for the small county, so you have to live in a county of less than 400,000 persons, and there's four applicants for this position.
And it's one position?
Correct.
Similar problem.
Yeah. It's a good problem to have, though.
Good problem to have.
Qualified people going for it.
So
I'm going to call Mr. DeMitt. I'll just get him on the phone at one time and proceed from there.
As you're trying to call him, this is Mr. Pacino. I am on the meeting right now.
Thank you, Mr. Pacino.
Please leave your name, your number, and message, and you'll be... All
right, we can call in maybe like 5 minutes. I understand that he might be working at this time, but I requested to be called.
Okay. So we have in attendance David Schwartz?
No.
Mr. Roger Skaggs.
Oh, I'm sorry, Roger Skaggs. Mr. Skaggs, yes. Can you come forward, please, and share your interest in serving with this board,
sure.
Or our committee?
Okay.
Thank you for your time today, and thank you for bumping this agenda item up a little bit. It'd be nice to head home a little early. So I do live in Prescott, Arizona, so that's probably one of the defining factors, you know, for wanting to go into the position of on the home inspectors rules and standards committee. I've been a home inspector for 23 years now. I've done over 6,000 inspections. I also do a lot of bank inspections, which are unrelated to home inspections, but I keep busy doing that as well. I've been a faculty member of the Southwest Institute of Property Inspection, which went by the wayside a few years ago, but I was a faculty member there, so I've done a lot of training. I've done a lot of parallel inspections, and I'm with everybody when it comes to the parallel process. You know, I want to be able to, you know, have some kind of better criteria for a parallel inspector. You know, there's a lot of, in my opinion, there's a lot of guys out there that are not, you know, fully qualified to do parallel inspections, and a lot of things get, you know, pushed aside, and it's not where I want to see the professional. I'm on the EAC council. I'm seeing a lot of the same things that heard today. You know, where it boils down to the parallel process. You know, it's not being performed correctly. Had a guy that got his license in February last year, and within a few months' time, he was in front of an EAC. So, and he could have been a lot better, because if he would have come to me, he wouldn't have ended up in that kind of situation for his parallels. He did inquire with me, but he didn't take my offer. I'm also sitting at Arizona ASHI president right now, so therefore, you know, I'm volunteering for that as well, which I'm glad to do. I've been involved with Arizona ASHI, you know, ever since, you know, I started home inspection, so I'm happy to, you know, be filling that position. And I'm really all about, you know, bringing integrity and accountability to the profession. Goes back to the parallel process. I have been attending the meetings for the standards change and so forth. We've put input in there as president of Arizona ASHI. So that just about sums it up, you know, for the amount of time that I should take here anyway. So I appreciate all your consideration, and I feel that I'm very well qualified to take that position for the small county.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to Mr. You want to try and call David?
Mr. Pacino. Do you want to go with him?
Well, did you want to try and call Randy Dimmitt?
I'm going to call online? Both Dennis works there if you would like me to. Mr. Swartz, this is Kurt
David.
Hey, David, this is Kurt Winch of AZBTR. We're here at the board meeting discussing the HIRS position.
Yes, thank you for calling.
Mr. Schwartz, we've got a presentation already by Mr. Skaggs, and I was going to see if, since Mr. Paisano was already online, I was going to have him go first, but we will ask you to just share your interest in serving on the board and give us a little of your background. But Mr. Pacino?
Yes.
Wait a minute, I want to go to Mr.
Yes.
Pacino first, since he was here.
Sounds great.
Can you share with our board your interest in serving on this committee, please? A bit of your background.
Yes, sir. So my major background was Marine Corps for 20-plus years, and having been in the Marine Corps and having to PCS change duty stations every 3 years, I understand the importance of change is good. You can't leave one person in a position for too long because it becomes less than beneficial for a committee. So I appreciate that the committee does change every 3 years. As a home inspector, I started doing home inspections in California in 2010, and I moved to Yuma, Arizona in 2016 and picked up doing home inspections here. And shortly after, I retired from the military because my inspection business went from zero to 60 overnight. For the past 4.5 years here in Yuma, I have done approximately 600 inspections a year as a single owner operator of the inspection business. So very busy, even though my experience is not as much as some guys on the board with 20 plus years. I do have that military background of writing orders and everything that goes with that. So my three main points of wanting to become on the board is kind of everybody has mentioned them already. The parallel process, I think, needs to be improved. The rules and standards, I believe, need to be updated. They haven't been updated in quite some time for some issues that are out there with current codes, etc. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
You were reviewing some of the issues with shared by the other.
I just lost the third issue or the third point that I wanted to make. But basically, for the rules and standards, I believe I could bring some experience there with writing the rules and standards. As I said, in the military for 20 years, every time I would go to a new duty station as a Marine officer, you would get there and orders would be just outdated, kind of like the rules and standards. And I would make it my point to make sure that every order I was in charge with was rewritten prior to my leaving. So it was current and up to date. And that's what I would like to bring to the Rules and Standards Committee is new rules and give my input on how I think that should go.
Very good. Thank you for sharing that. Mr. Schwartz, can you share us with the board your background and interest on serving this committee, please?
Yes, thank you. I have submitted all the information that would outline experience, and I can go over some of that, but it's extensive, going back 33 years in Arizona doing home inspections and running a home inspection company and having been through the process of writing the statutes and rules packages since inception of the process in Arizona. And unfortunately, COVID created one more disruption as it relates to the process going on right now with the standards rewriting. And so we're right in the middle of that. And once that gets through, the BTR, once we complete it there, the process is not done, because then we're dealing with the process at GIRC. So we had hoped to wrap this up during this current term. The three on the committee are in, but we're actually delayed as a result of COVID. So I would like very much to be able to complete that, and that's kind of my interest in reinstatement. So I don't know if we're just dealing with the folks from the small counties, or if you've already gone through these separately or what. But if there's any questions, I'm open for that. I have experience in home inspection, of course, since for 33 years. I've been a licensed real estate salesperson for years, inactive though, and a licensed termite inspector since 2005. So anything else I can help you with in terms of answering questions, I'm here for that.
Thank you. The board may ask some questions. And yes, this is for the small county position. It's a three-year position, just for clarification. Did you get Mr. Dimmitt on?
I'm going to call him right now again. Hello, Mr. Dimmitt. This is Kurt Ranger with AZBTR. We're here to talk about the home inspector positions. Are you available?
Sure. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. This is Jack Gilmore. I'm the chair of the board. We've heard from some other members who want to be a committee member. Would you share with us a little bit of your background and your interest in serving on this committee, please?
Well, my background has been construction. Been a home inspector now going on almost 7 years. Worked for a truss manufacturer for 20 years. Was a licensed general contractor for about 5 or 6 years over in California. And I have a passion for this profession, and just want to volunteer my time to get involved and help, improve upon it.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to open it up for questions from the board members. Well, let me start. I've got a question. Historically, we've heard some concerns. I'll issue this to all four members that because you are remote, there's been problems getting parallel inspectors and finding qualified persons that can provide expedient assistance. If selected, or how would you want to deal? Is this still an issue, and how would you approach this? Let's start I'd like to go in order of the people we started with. So, Mr. Skaggs, would you address that?
It's been a problem, yes, because there's a lot of guys out there that don't want to do parallel inspections. Probably having some kind of criteria to be a parallel inspector, maybe, you know, at least a pat on the back or something to help the process along and designate certain people to be a parallel inspector. Right now, the way the law is written and everything, anyone that, you know, once when they pass their test and they're approved by the board, they can do parallel inspections. That's right.
Criteria.
I'm sorry. That changed. There's a three-year criteria. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
There's a rule.
That they did pass, so that we're in the right direction anyway.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Pacino?
Yes, sir. It is difficult to find parallel inspectors here in Yuma County. The reason for that is because there's just so few inspectors here. I think there's eight of us currently. And, you know, honestly, nobody wants to train their competition when it's so small of an area. And I honestly don't know the correction for that. I think that parallel inspectors need to be vetted a little more. Some of them that are doing parallels probably shouldn't be doing home inspections, in my opinion. And maybe, you know, change the rules for parallel inspections on, you know, instead of one submittal at the end, maybe every five inspections, the parallel inspector needs to send in some sort of report to the board on how the parallel inspector is doing with problems that he's having, etc., so that it can be processed more by the board throughout instead of just the end product. And I don't have an answer on how you make more parallel inspectors in the small counties, because nobody wants to train their competition when it comes down to it.
And that's been an issue that we've heard about. Mr. Schwartz, can you address that, please? You have an opinion?
Yes. Well, realistically, the parallel supervising inspector shortage is an intermittent problem. It does not exist all the time, and real estate markets contract and expand, and during the expansion process, it can occur where there's shortages. But I actually, with my company, we've been offering parallels since day one of licensing. So it is sourced out of Phoenix, but, you know, in the beginning, we really wanted 100 inspections because 30, really, when you have such lax requirements as it relates to only 84 hours of education and only 30 parallels, pretty much everybody coming out of this process is a bit dangerous to the public, in my opinion. It just can't be done. You cannot learn this business that rapidly. So anything that would burden supervising inspectors or the applicants with additional reporting at five inspections or something, I would not advocate that at all. So since we settled at 30 parallels after wanting 100, we always knew either way that the small counties are just, they're going to have to make adjustments because, you know, we can't guarantee that there's a parallel inspector in Happy Jacks, Arizona, so that it's convenient for the applicant. We just can't do that. That'll never happen. So if folks come to Phoenix, we have openings right now, and lots of others do. There's other more sizable communities where a person can go to get their parallels right now. So it's an intermittent problem that ebbs and flows, and it's just that's how that works.
Okay, thanks. Thank you for sharing that. Mr. Dimmitt, do you have an opinion on that?
I concur with David. I mean, when I got into this business, I couldn't find anybody to do parallels around here because, again, nobody wants to help the competition. So I actually went to David's company and got my parallels, you know, took the time off and went down to Phoenix to do it. I also agree that it's way too easy to get into this business. 30 parallels is nowhere near enough for anybody to get a glimpse of what they're going to run into. I've got a couple of inspectors that work for me right now. Anybody that has come to me to do parallels, I tell them, yeah, I'll do them. And I basically try to hire them for one thing. Right now for us, it's just the lack of the labor pool. We don't have the labor pool that Phoenix does. We're in the remote county. I agree. It needs to be harder to get into this business. It's too easy and it's not fair to the home buyer.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, board members, of these candidates? Okay, We have four qualified candidates. We're going to make a selection of one.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to, if you want to do the same process we did with the previous position.
I'll start it.
Mr. Chairman, can I speak?
Certainly.
Peter Leeds, once again. I just wanted to give my opinion, being a member of the committee. I can understand the need for change. However, David Schwartz is the chairman of our committee right now, and we are in a major project. And so I would really like for you to consider him until we get out of this project. Thank you.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah. I'd like to also state something now. You guys are considering David Schwartz's position. He's been on there from day one. The issues with the parallel reflects the current committee.
Okay. The issue being lack of candidates in these remote areas?
Lack of proper training, getting good qualified instructors and inspectors.
Yeah, that's what the committee
So I would love to have a whole discussion on parallel inspections and all things related.
But we can't do that now.
If you would like to do that.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's what the position needs. We need a correction on this parallel.
Well,
and we need
the position needs somebody that meets the criteria of a small county
that's true.
Home inspector.
But parallel is a problem down there as well as here. We need someone that will address it. But my choice was Schwartz.
Okay. So is that...
I move.
Are you making a motion?
Yeah.
Is that a motion?
Okay. Schwartz.
David Schwartz.
Yeah.
For the position. Is there a second on that?
Second.
Okay. Thank you, Clarence. We have a motion for... to select David Schwartz to stay on the committee. Let's do a roll call.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Excuse me. Helmut Hack.
Aye.
Michael Kaleka.
Nay.
Colleen Lindgren.
Nay.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Noel.
Nay.
Stacey Skanky.
Nay.
Kent Wilson. Still have an absent. So I have a four nays and three yays. So the motion fails.
Okay. So, Mr. Kalika, would you like to make a motion?
I would, yes. And I just want to say before I do, I think that all four candidates are excellent. I appreciate Mr. Schwartz and his current role as board chair. Personally, I feel that Mr. Skaggs had the strongest resume, in my opinion. And so I would like to make a motion to appoint Mr. Skaggs, Roger Skaggs, as a small county member to the HIRSC.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Hack, seconded. Let's do a roll call, Kurt.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Helmut Hack.
Aye.
Michael Kaleka.
Aye.
Colleen Lindgren.
Nay.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Noel.
Aye.
Stacey Skanky.
Aye.
Kent Wilson. Still absent. So the motion carries.
Thank you. You know, again, we've had some tough decisions here. Mr. Skagg, congratulations being a member of the committee. We appreciate your interest. Mr. Schwartz, gosh, tough decision. Yeah, and look forward to your participation. And you'll be working with Peter there. David, thank you for your years of assistance here. We hope you will continue to be a resource for this committee and for the board. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that, and I will.
And Mr. Dimmitt, please, thanks for calling in and showing your interest. And Mr. Pisano, thank you. Good day to you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Okay.
So thank you for your consideration, and I thank the board for making the change. I think that is the right way to go.
Thank you for your interest. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we have some people in the back here. I'm just curious, we want to jump to them.
Yep. We're moving on to registration issues, all the nines. This, we have Nick Johnson. Okay. Can you come forward, please? Julie?
All three gentlemen are under the consent agenda, so I would say unless there was something specific the board wanted to pull.
I need to recuse myself involving Mr. Ouellette.
Is it 16-4? Excuse me.
He's 9014. Right.
What number is that?
9E14. Robert Ouellette. So, Julie, can you review a motion for the consent then?
Sure.
Exit, leaving out 9-14.
So we're under 9E, which is for the board for just some criminal history. So I did create that summary page for your review.
So does the board members want to discuss any of these other items in the 9Es? Okay. Kent or Colleen, do you have any questions on any of these other candidates?
This is Colleen. I do not.
Okay. Kent, are you back?
I sure am.
Great.
Kent, this is Kurt Winter. At what time did you leave the meeting? What time did you come back?
I left at 10:46 and came back at 11:27.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion then to accept the licensing consent agenda items 9E1 through 9E13, as well as 9E15 through 9E18.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of approving these applications, please say aye.
Aye.
Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
May I abstain since I just joined back?
Don't need to.
No, well, we're not voting on anything that you missed. We're just voting on a new item involving these candidates seeking registration.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, aye.
So we have a unanimous vote for items 9E1 through 9E13 and 9E15 through 9E18. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
What are we doing?
That was a consent. There's a motion to approve the consent on items 9E1.
We did that. We had a motion and a second, and everybody said aye.
So it's 9E14.
We're done with those.
I've got to recuse myself from 9E14 then.
Yes.
So 14's next.
Okay, so then as a result, if we look at agenda item 9E14, Mr. Robert Ouellette, any discussion on that?
I move to grant. Approve.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
I'm going to abstain, and then...
Yep. And then Colleen?
Aye.
And Kent?
Aye.
All right. Motion carries unanimously.
Except my abstention.
Yep. Correct.
And obviously, I need some more caffeine. Okay. Do we have...
Approve that agenda item.
Meaning he's good to go.
Yep.
If I could just address the board real quick.
Please come to the board and introduce yourself.
My name is Brad Howe.
I applied for my licensing with the BTR on October 29th. Today it makes it 12 days or 12 weeks and 4 days into the process, mainly because of the holdup with the background situation. My background, it was a misdemeanor 18 years ago. The fact that it still held me up an additional 6 weeks over the fact, it just seems a little bit ridiculous as far as time frame goes, because right now we're at over a quarter of a year just to get my license approved. That has definitely impacted me financially. I was anticipating working, starting as a home inspector at the very beginning of December. This delay has really put me and my family through quite a hardship, and I just want to bring that to the board's attention, that if there's any way to possibly move forward in the future with misdemeanor items, maybe putting a
conditioning,
make it, you know, so, you know, say after 10 years, why does it still become an issue?
You might answer that question. The statute, unfortunately, doesn't make that stipulation. We need to update it, and we're very aware, and we're very sorry that you have to wait on this, and the board has to make a decision on it. But most other boards will have language. If it's over 5 years old, we don't even have to look at it. Unfortunately, ours are sort of archaic.
Have any language that says that? I would like that fixed as well.
Do you
have any input on that? And we have spoke before. Just as far as the time frames go, yes, Mr. Howe applied at the end of October. He was deemed administratively complete as of November 16th. His report went to an evaluator, and we got it back the 13th of December. And so that for he missed the December meeting and is now here at the January 14th.
You know, we last month we did address it, or tried to address it, by when we send out notices or whatever that people need to 90 days ahead of time. Was it?
That was regarding the renewals, but yeah. At no point in time was his application delayed due to the criminal history, except for the fact that he missed the December.
Unfortunate sequence
of timing
for
the holiday season, so apologize for that.
Absolutely, I understand that.
Beyond our control.
But, you know, throughout the process, I had two different licensing specialists, two different people who handled the evaluation of my report. So there just seemed to be a lot of miscommunication. I was told initially by my original licensing specialist that my license was going to be approved December 17th. And I got notified on December 16th that wasn't the case. So, I mean, it's just been a lot of ups and downs, and it's been really frustrating. And I'm not here to whine and complain about it. I just want to bring it to your attention, so hopefully some adjustments could be made in the future to help expedite the process, because in four months' time to approve a license just seems to me to be extremely long. I mean, that's a quarter of a year we're talking about, a third of a year. So just want to bring that to the board's attention to see if we can push that forward in the future to try to help expedite things so we can get people ready into the workforce.
And I would say, Mr. Howe, one of the things that would be also helpful is to write to your legislative members about those types of things, because the legislature is who is in charge of that. We can only do so much within the bounds of what we're allowed to do under ARS. So I would definitely suggest reaching out to your two members of the House and the Senate.
Yes. And to your home inspection committee members.
You got a new one right there.
That's
so,
the
yeah.
number one thing you can say. Just put that on
talk,
the
to, talk to them. Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks for coming forward. And
thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Okay. Okay, thank you, Mr. Skaggs. This is agenda item 9F1, applicants David and Menica. Julie, I'm sorry, Judith?
Do you want to skip back to the beginning of licensing 8?
Okay, Julie?
process. So 8A, six applications are all lumped together because the professional exam discipline is unknown or not specified for a specific branch of engineering.
Mr. Chair, I believe a lot of that stems from the fact that the licenses in which these individuals have comes from states that don't specify a branch of engineering, but otherwise they have satisfied all of the examination requirements.
Yeah, I don't have a problem approving 8A, all of them.
Can we do them as one fell swoop, or do we have to do them individually?
Absolutely.
Any discussion items? Any of those applicants up for discussion of any kind, Julie? Board members have any questions on any of these candidates?
How do we know in general that they're what their license is? I mean, is it such a generic license and it's just are we looking for something more specific?
A lot of states it's just professional engineer. It doesn't specify.
And I did note in the memos like their degree, if it's in, you know, civil engineering, their years of experience, and then their council records are included in the package as well to kind of go for the what type of experience.
What they're asking for is what coincides with what was in the packet for education and stuff. So it seems like, you know, they're not trying to reach for something extra.
Yeah, and like sort of what I said, most states just don't keep a record of the specific exam that they took it in.
Would NCCS have that data?
No.
Maybe? They don't specify.
That's why
it's
either
because they don't have it.
We're in the minority of states that actually are branch specific.
But we're fortunate to have Julie, who's done all that research into their backgrounds,
so that
and
you
give
have
us an informed
all that information that you're thinking.
Yep.
So they're registered in another state.
Yes.
As a general P.
As a general P, and they want to be registered in this state.
I noticed that this one applicant here that we're considering now did not check whether the first one had been convicted or not. Failed to check that box. Number two, have you ever been convicted of criminal offense?
Danny.
Is that
Wiley?
Are you looking at him?
Are you on?
Yep.
A2?
Rachel?
Rachel Didweiler?
Yep.
Yep, so we did get a corrected page. It wasn't included in the package.
Okay. I didn't say no, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the licensure or applications for registration for agenda items 8A1 through 8A6.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Stacy. Thank you, Stacy. All those in favor of approving the applications 6A1 through 6A6, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay, item 8B, exam waivers.
Yes.
Julie?
For the exam waivers, I would say the board would like to lump together numbers 1 through 4. All of these applicants are coming from the same firm in Canada, and they have shown proof of registration for at least 10 of the last 15 years in Canada. And that would fall under ARS 32-126A3.
Okay, then you want to bring up others for discussion?
Okay.
Five?
Number five, Mr. Utomo actually came before the board previously in November. It was directed by a board member to collect additional information, so 3 certificates of experience and registration requirements from the 2 countries where he had been registered. So those were provided. So he is back before the board today for also exam waivers. And then, let's see, number 6, Mr. Snowden. So he has taken the Structural 1 exam, but he is applying to waive the Structural 2 exam, and he is also licensed for 10 of the last, at least 10 years, the last 10 years. Number 7 and 8, Mr. Wendland and Mr. King are currently registered with the board already in a different discipline, a different branch of engineering, and are applying to waive those, the PE geological and then the structural one exam. And they have shown, they under statute 32 26B1, they have shown 4 years of experience in those branches of engineering.
I have a question about 7 then. He's
number 7.
He's a, if I recall, he's registered right now.
He's a civil.
Civil, okay.
And his council record and certificates were evaluated to show that he does have the geological engineering experience.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Noel?
When you say the experience, is it the educational experience or is it actually experience in the field of working?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Coach.
Well, if there's no other question, we can take all of these, A, B, 1 through 8, as one motion.
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chair, for approving the exam waiver application for agenda items 8. B1A through 8.
Okay, we have a motion to...
I'll second.
Second, thank you. All those in favor of waiving the exam waivers for items 8B1 through 8, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
And Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay. HC.
Chair, can I have a quick question?
Certainly.
I'm sorry. Like these exam waivers, this has bothered me in the past, and it seems relatively new, maybe last year or so. Is that right? I don't remember this in the past, this type of waiver. It seemed harder to get a waiver.
I think it's relatively new coming before this. I'm bringing more things before the board, but trying to make it as simple as possible, broken out in these categories with all of the information behind it for you to make that decision. But the actual, I think, application for exam waiver has been there.
The statute isn't new.
Yeah, the waivers have been there, but it just seems like there's more of them.
Was staff previously
they
kind
all
of reviewing
come
those
to Arizona.
Prior to the, oh, okay.
I'm not entirely sure before my arrival to board, but this is what I believe needs to happen.
Right.
Agreed. So.
So it may not be that there have been more of them recently, it's just that now they're coming for the board, so we're seeing them as a point. Gotcha.
HC, these are the applications with certificates of experience where at least one is not completed by a registrant. Let's say for numbers 2, 3, and 5, it's during the same time period as a certificate of experience that was signed off by a registrant.
And I believe if I may,
a
quick question. So even without that, as I was reading it, it looks like they still have, even if you were to discount the one that's not approved, they still have more than enough experience with the ones that are under a licensed professional.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. The only one I would say, if the board wanted to look at number 4, only one was submitted by a non-registrant, one certificate of experience was submitted. And then he also provided some forms from other states, but most of his experience is self-certified, self-verified. He's the only one.
Any other questions regarding these candidates?
Nope. Well, what are the experiences of C4? Looking at the application, I don't see anything listed.
So his application was reviewed by an evaluator, which gave him 283 months of work experience credit. But again, it was self-certified. Like, he signed off on his work experience, the applicant. And his explanation, I think some of his previous references are now deceased, or he's just unable to obtain them with our required forms.
But he has the time.
And my only, I bring it before the board for architects just because the statute reads the board 5/2 majority vote may allow for that experience except for an architect. That wording is in there. So I'm not sure how they want to proceed with those architect applicants.
Well, unanimous then.
Or at least 2/3? Maybe I misheard that.
Yeah, it has to be more than 2/3.
It means that you can't accept anything but a registrant's.
Yeah, so the statute is, so you vote to accept experience that's not completed by a registrant, but it does say accept for an architect.
So I'm going to follow up with Mr. Noel's question. Why didn't he complete his application or fill it out?
I'm sorry, which one is this one?
8C4.
Mr. Thomas.
Dean Thomas? Melissa, you've got maybe
Is this the one that's, I think it's redacted, so that may have been the one I scanned in. Redact them for the but his actual application is filled out.
Okay, great.
It's redacted for what?
When we send it to an evaluator. Redact the first one.
So redacted everything.
So the reason he couldn't get a licensed registrant to sign off is because that individual is either deceased or is they just can't get a hold of him.
Right.
I know at least half of the ones that signed for me are gone.
But he does have the education and experience. Work experience, yeah. Okay. Okay. Any other discussion on this? Is there a motion? This is for 8C1 through 8C5.
I move it to approve.
Second, Kalika.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to recommend approval of 8C1 through 8C5. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. Unanimous vote. Kurt? Okay. 8D. Julie?
8D, I pulled this application out separately just because he has two items for your attention. So some criminal history back in 1994, and then he is applying to waive the FD exam. So he has shown that he has the AVIT accredited degree and 12 years of post-grad experience to qualify for that waiver.
Yeah, I would move to approve D.
Okay. We have a motion to recommend approval of D1AB. Is there a second?
Second. Kalika.
Thank you, Mr. Kalika. All those in favor of recommend approval of 8D1AV, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Kelly? Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. Unanimous. Okay. 8E1AB. Julie?
This gentleman also has two items for review. So one of his certificates of experience is not signed off by a registrant, and then his discipline
is also unknown. Just the two items. But he does have enough experience
and qualified.
So he's a PE in New York?
Yes.
But we don't know what the engineering is?
He's just a professional engineer in New York.
His degrees are in electrical engineering, so we assume that's where he's headed.
Yeah.
And he did provide three COEs, which were evaluated, which did give him electrical experience, so 290 months of electrical experience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to approve agenda item A's E1A and 1B.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Stinky. All those in favor of approving on the application for 8E1, A, and B, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Killeen?
Aye.
Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay, 8F1.
AF is a little bit different. So Mr. Long has not yet submitted an application for home inspector certification. He has submitted the form for the board to review his criminal past to determine if that would, I guess, disqualify him for certification. You guys had this, something similar to this a few months ago.
Yeah, he has a pretty colorful background.
It's an interesting read.
He said call if needed, so at this point we don't need him yet.
We need to call you. We can discuss it.
Yeah. And call him if there's questions.
Yeah.
I'll just start the discussion. Yeah, this is one of the more colorful backgrounds I've ever read coming before the board. But since 2015, that he's been sober, clean.
He's got five years. It was seven and dropped to five.
Okay, I thought in the correspondence there was a reference that he had, as of 2014, he's not any more problems. But we had a letter of support from his case officer, I suppose is the right term, and his wife. So at this point, based on the number of years, would...
And he wants to be a home inspector.
Right.
I think that's going to be pretty rough. I don't think he can handle it personally.
We can give him the opportunity to try, and if not, then we may see him here. So.
He's had 8 years to turn things around.
What was the previous... Because you mentioned there was a previous case similarly... few months ago, but I think that was
it was similar. They provided their criminal history to review before applying for a home inspector.
And did the board just that one?
Yeah. Okay. Based on the number of years being sober.
Gotcha.
Well, I just think confrontation could set them off.
You would just...
I mean, I'd be willing to say, yeah, go for it, but...
You got some concerns.
I think, you know, I mean, can he be tested?
I would suggest asking Mr. Donald for an opinion on this, as well as it's a little different from our normal process procedures as well. It's kind of instilled upon us on the boards.
Mr. Donald,
yeah.
Please share some wisdom here.
Well, and actually, Judy and I were just discussing this. I mean, what the board would be doing here would be making a determination that the person's criminal record, which is as disclosed, I mean, there are an awful lot of caveats with this. What the board would be making a determination is that the criminal history as disclosed would or would not disqualify him from getting licensed here. Doesn't mean he will get licensed here. All it means is that as a standalone, this specific criminal history, the board does not believe will disqualify him from obtaining the license.
He still has to go through the process.
Oh, yeah.
We heard about today,
yeah.
The 30 peer reviews, so
yeah, this
there's going to be an issue. It'll expose
this
itself.
This is simply a screening process the legislature put in place, because rather than going through the whole application process and then finding out you're denied for something that happened years before, this gives you a chance, but it's a very fine wire to walk, because it gives the board an opportunity to make an advanced ruling to a degree, but again, you're not approving anything, you're just stating whether or not this criminal history would disqualify him from getting a license. There may be any number of other things that would disqualify him we didn't know nothing about. He could, you know, this could not factor at all. He could be granted. We just don't know anything else except whether or not this would disqualify him.
But it allows him to move to the next step of the process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It allows him to move to the next step.
Yeah, if we,
knowing
if we
that
say
this
that
wouldn't be the
what he's done
problem.
Would not hold him back. Problem is if there's a complaint filed against him based on the same stuff, what would we do then?
Well, what do you mean if there's a complaint based? You mean if the criminal history is reopened?
Well, based on the criminal history, if all of a sudden there's a complaint filed against him because now he's, you know, attacking a homeowner or whatever,
well,
what would we do then?
That
That would be a whole other matter you would address at the time after he'd been registered.
Right.
But you are looking at whether or not the criminal history would have a reasonable relationship to what he's applying to do.
And I definitely would caution the board about going too far down the road thinking what might happen if he does something in the future that constitutes a criminal act that then there would be an allegation that, well, you knew about criminal acts from before. I would caution against going down that because we don't have any information about what he's actually like right now outside of what the documentation we've been provided. And again, the only thing the board can do today would be to make a decision based on the disclosed criminal history. There may be things that we don't know about. And so the board can't say that none of that could. So you can't say the complete criminal history, just that the materials provided to the board would or would not disqualify him.
Yeah. I'd be inclined, as Jack mentioned, to support the letting him move forward with the application process based on the like you said, based on the information we have, and only this, not ahead of time, not further back. I'm comfortable moving forward with this process.
So we haven't done any background check yet. This is just his information provided to us.
Could we do a background check?
Not yet.
Right, but that's information
is like a pre-clearance.
We haven't
the best way to
filed that and researched that.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a tough case in the sense it's a home inspector. And things he's done here. If you're a home inspector, they come into play or could come into play. If he was applying to be an engineer, none of it would matter at all. But home inspectors is a different.
It's the people contact.
Yeah.
In this case, there could be a lot. And you've seen some of the cases that we've had so far.
But we all have people contacts every day with clients and
colleagues.
Gosh, so many cities.
Yeah.
I guess I'll go back with what the information has been presented and his effort to improve his life since 2014. Married with a new child, and the letters of support I think are impressive. I'm inclined to give him his chance to. If he comes back because of a complaint, then this board will review it and make a decision at that time. But until then, I'm in favor of supporting his interest.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to approve.
It's actually under the statute. It would be a motion to issue a determination on the petition
that he can file an application.
Criminal history will not disqualify him from obtaining a license.
A motion to issue a determination.
Under the statute, the agency has to issue a determination on the petition filed by him. So it's going to be a motion to, essentially you're going to be issuing a determination that the criminal history will not disqualify him from obtaining a license.
That's the history as presented.
The history as presented, true. Now there's a presumption built into the statute. Under the statute, he's required to include his complete criminal history. So, when it comes to a question of if something is discovered that wasn't included in that, I've seen enough in the digital world to know that. It's difficult to say you've got everything and that nothing else will possibly jump out of the woodwork. So I would consider it complete for now. But if something else were to come out, obviously, that would provide a basis for a determination at that time.
But there will be further analysis by staff on this.
Well, there will still be an application. They'll still have to go through the whole application process, and then you'll have all the information, including this, and if there is a difference in a criminal history report that comes back, the board certainly could consider that
at that time.
And he would also have to obtain a fingerprint clearance card as a home inspector.
Yeah.
Which he does have, actually, a valid one. But it will come back before the board once he is ready to be granted.
Sure, he's got a lot of fingerprints based on that record.
I'd like to make a motion to follow the guidance of Mr. Donald and his words, which were very eloquently put together.
Yeah, you got to repeat it.
Work for I don't know if I can.
Issue a determination.
Yeah, issue a determination
of
the criminal history as presented will not preclude Mr. Long, from moving forward with the licensure process as a home inspector.
And from obtaining a license.
And from obtaining a license.
So moved. We have a motion and a second. Thank you. All those in favor of supporting this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
Aye.
Great. That's unanimous, Kurt. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, halfway done.
Everything else is consent, which is next.
91 through, I'll follow your lead, Julie, on these.
Well, these items are under the consent agenda, so unless there's any specific items that people would like to pull out.
You've already consented all of 90.
Oh, we lost.
I don't have a problem with approving CD.
Clarence took a break. If we have to adjourn for a second.
No, we still have two on the line. So.
I want to make sure we're notating.
Oh, we still have people?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was empty.
All right, they'll let the record show that Mr.
Board members. Sorry.
We have lost the board members for a few minutes.
We still have a quorum.
We can still continue. We just have to notate that.
We'll wait for clearance on another issue. So, Julie, there's really no question then on these consent items.
No.
Any board members have questions on these items? Okay, let's have a motion.
So, what are you talking about, 9A?
9G1? And 2? Are we doing H's as well? Or just 9G1 and 2?
9, 9, 9B, 9C, 9D, F, G, H.
Okay. All those, right?
So C, D?
F, G, H, I? Everything.
Oh, wow. It's making it too easy. I have a second.
Wait,
we haven't made a motion yet.
Fill in the gap.
He's on. There's a lot to cover here.
Mr. Chair, Mike Kalaika, I would make a motion to approve licensing consent agenda items 9A, B, C, D, F, G, H, and I, since item E was already approved earlier.
Okay. With the record show that clearance is back in session.
I will second.
Okay, we have motion and second.
So where are we?
To approve consent item, all the nines.
All the nines.
Yeah, all the nines. Yeah, what's left over?
Except E, because you already did E.
Yeah, we already did it.
So all those in favor of approving all the consent items in number 9, except for 9E, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Colleen?
Aye.
Kent?
Aye.
Thank you. That's unanimous vote, Kurt. Okay, moving right along. We've done 10. Okay, good stuff. Director's report. Anything else that we missed? I don't think so.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. You have your director's report as submitted. And start with budget. About halfway through the fiscal year. And Kurt and I just had a meeting with our financial analyst from Central Services Bureau. Was that this week or very recently?
Last week.
Just to make sure that we're on track for expenses. There's a few things coming up that we weren't looking at because of the construction that's going to be done on this building, which largely is covered by General Services Division. But some of it will fall back on our board too. So trying to just be mindful with the funds there and make sure that we will end the year well. Digitization, we are just so, I assume we're all excited. I'm ridiculously excited every time I talk about this. How many file cabinets are gone now to surplus? 20.
I feel like 20 plus at least have left with more that need to go.
And they're coming to get some more. So in our former boardroom that used to be completely lined, those are gone. The ones that were piled up outside my office are gone. It's just really exciting. And ICM Document Solutions that's doing the digitization was thankfully finally able to obtain a new piece of equipment so they can start scanning our microfiche because they had something and I guess we broke it. No, we didn't break it. Well, I don't know what happened. But anyway, with the back orders on everything, they had to wait to get that equipment. So that's in place. They've started on our books, haven't they, Kurt?
They took all of our board meeting books. We have a collection of books that go back from the very first meeting. It's on the rice paper.
100 years ago, like old bound.
Wow. So
yeah.
They'll return those, but they're going to have them scanned in, and I'm going to make them available on the website and everything once that's done.
It's going to be so neat. Wow. Yeah. And they asked if they could cut those to scan them, and we were like, no.
They'll pay them some money, thank you.
Because, I love them.
What are you doing with all the extra space?
We're just enjoying not being tunneled down the file cabinets, I think.
It's like cartwheels and somersaults, I imagine.
We're going to bring in some exercise equipment. So that's going really well and on track to be completed this fiscal year, which is good. And our OSPB budget analyst follows up with us regularly. Is that going to be done this fiscal year? Yes, we're doing well with that. Board staff update. So, hooray, we were able to hire a new board investigator. I wish I could introduce him. He was sitting along the wall, Philip Carden. Doug and I and Kurt participated in those interviews, and he is a retired law enforcement from the Salt Lake area, Utah. And Doug, do you
want to
add anything about Phil?
We're very excited to have Phil on board. He's got a lot of good, solid investigative experience, is what we look for. I think he's going to be a great addition. It's going to take him a while to come up to speed, but I'm confident he'll get there.
Great.
He's, really nice. And I only had to kind of threaten him once. I said, I'm going to have to write you up for discipline if you don't get something in your office so it looks personal, like somebody's working in here.
So he has.
Sorry?
He has put something in, right?
He brought a little picture, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, he said he's working on it. Oh, and a little Zen water berry thing, something to keep, it's good. He's great. Anyway, I'm just teasing.
He said his name is Phil.
We have also extended an offer for the missing customer service representative that we've had vacant for a while. And we anticipate that person starting this coming Monday. So if all goes well and everything works out there, then I'll be able to introduce her to you next month. We still have another vacancy we're working on that needs to be filled and that will ease Kurt's workload. And as soon as we can do that, our head count will be 23. We are authorized for 25, but watching the funds, I'm not entirely sure that we could sustain 25 with our current appropriation. So we're seeing what we can make work, looking at how things are gonna move ahead. It's just a lot of moving parts right now with what's changing in the board and looking ahead at our upcoming online transition and things like that. So just moving ahead cautiously always. Board composition member update. So with heavy heart, and that's exactly how I started my email to boards and commissions, I'm telling you that Aaron Green accepted a position, which we're super excited for him, with the Court of Appeals here in the state.
Wow.
And so that's a conflict of interest, and he had to resign his position as board member. But Aaron was just amazing in the short time that we had him working with the home inspector rules committee. Boy, he just dug right in and was really really a tremendous help. So
and he argued right with the best of those HR.
He did.
So how was it a conflict of interest? Unless a case came up that involved him, right?
It was a conflict on the court's side, not on our side.
They felt it was.
It was an agreement, I think, when he was hired there. I don't know. You'll have to ask them. But
most of the time, when you clerk, you can't do
other
things. So another discussion, maybe the next meeting, about who's going to replace him.
It has to be someone on the board, right?
Yeah. It has to be a public.
Oh yeah, yes. We should have put that on the agenda, and I'm sorry we forgot that.
It was just the 21st when it happened.
Yeah, that's true. It did pop up really quickly, and I think I'm still shocked. So happy for him, sad for us. So I did alert my liaison at boards and commissions, and I continue to send emails and ask for updates that I can bring back to you, but I mostly don't hear back. Anything. So I'll just continue to keep reaching out and asking for updates and hoping that happens. So you've got the licensing numbers in print, your enforcement numbers, and then I just thought it would be interesting to put calendar year numbers. We typically go by fiscal year, you know, on the reports and things provided, but Kurt helped me with that to get some calendar end of year totals that I just thought were interesting. So I really don't have anything else, unless you have any questions or anything else you'd like on a report. Steve?
I ask you, when you've digitized all this information, what's the backup for that? I mean, how do they...
I'm going to let Kurt answer
when you lose your... When their computer system goes down or whatever, what happens to us, you... The files.
So what we have currently is all of our documents are kept in a Google Drive cloud, and this is backed up by Asset. Asset has, if something's accidentally deleted either from our Gmail or the Google Drive, they have a backup for 30 days. So we can always go back to that. Security profiles for access to these master files have been changed, so staff members are not able to delete said files within the cloud. They can move things into it, but they're not going to be able to delete some things like that to protect them. Right now, after they scan it, they put it up into FileZilla, which is kind of just a way to move files between clouds, and I've been just moving them over into our master files from there. Whilst they're scanning them, if we do require a physical file, we can request it, and they will give it back to us at that time.
The actual physical original file, you mean?
Correct.
Like if they've taken it to scan it and Julie or one of her team needs access to it for reference, we just send them an email, let them know, and they'll get that right back.
And the actual document?
If they still retain it.
Once this whole project is over, then those will be purged, the physical documents, as long as we have all of the electronic documents.
Purged, does that mean it goes into cold storage somewhere, or is it destroyed?
It's destroyed,
but not the books.
Have you guys considered, you worried about the backup? Do you keep your own hard drive? Is that ever been considered?
It's in the cloud. It's not a specific hard drive on the computer.
Yeah.
So basically...
But does the board, you, within the board in the building, keep your own hard drive? Or will you? As a copy backup.
How many terabytes do you think you have to store so far?
So Asset has told us that they have unlimited storage with their contract with Google, but on 1.4 million pieces of paper, basically, / microfiche, is quite a bit of space.
And this process and this company, this has all been vetted through the state and through procurement. You can't just contract randomly with somebody that isn't approved by the state.
Yeah. Going back to that recommendation, I mean, hard drives are so cheap right now. You can buy one for multiple terabytes. You can just download everything and have it locally.
Well, we can. It wouldn't be an issue if that's what the board would like, and it can be done. We have the ability to do that. So
I'm just thinking having a backup more than one place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Say two backups. Two different places.
You do, but having gone through some of my own nightmares with backups, the more the better.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you ought to go get one of those old tape recorders and do some
Yeah. They can't even make those anymore.
We'll see. Once we've digitized, I can get a good sense of how much space it actually does take up, because Google will let me know that. And I imagine it's going to be massive, but multiple hard drives can be purchased if it's too massive for one.
We can also bring in assets to talk with you and answer questions, too, if you want.
Yeah. Right, about and the security of it.
Yeah, and the security of it. And I just followed up with Julie recently to ask how her staff is doing accessing what had already been digitized, and she gave me a thumbs up favorable report.
You know, all that extra room you have, I could probably just file the hard copies here.
Well, we could just keep the paper, I guess, too.
No more paper. We're trying so hard.
It seems like just recently there was a problem with the cloud or something.
Yeah,
I think someone ran out of it. I think it was Microsoft. Power went out. Whole thing was down for X amount of hours or something. I forgot.
Well, once upon a time, a lot of things were kept on shared drives and locally on computers. Yeah, but we don't do that anymore. We try to keep everything in the cloud.
Big cloud.
Yeah.
Ideally, hopefully you just have two separate things. So
yeah, ideally, it would be a server that has mirror drives. And,
okay.
Any cybersecurity concerns?
No, the state is very vigilant with cybersecurity.
We're contracted with Asset. We don't have our own IT team to deal with that, so we feel in good hands with Asset, and they take care of a lot of other boards, especially with security. Always updates. They're always pushing software and updates to all of our computers.
All the time.
So they're always just on it.
And they continually test all the employees as well. So if you click on something that you're not supposed to, well, we take training, everybody's required to do training, but then also if you click on something, you get a, oops, you messed up big time, and then they're like, take that security training again. Or if you recognize it and you click on their little fishing hook thing, they're like, congratulations, you recognized a threat. You know?
It definitely tests us on phishing attacks.
Phishing attacks.
With the Google, you have to go through what's called an Okta login to get into our Google Drive,
that's
as well as
another
access to
security.
Things. So there's lots of things that people have to do in order to access these. Okay.
Let's see, so I don't think we have reports for items 12 or 13, and 14.
They've just been talking about the standards of practice. That's what they've been trying to work on, and that's what those minutes entail. So, and then their next meeting is February 15th. It'll be continuing that discussion.
Next meeting is what?
February 15th.
For the home inspectors.
Okay.
So we'll be one member short.
Correct.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, until we can find someone else.
Yep. Can somebody just sit in?
Can I call the statute? The board chair can designate a board member.
I think it's based on the statute.
The statute requires the architect member, and the statute is old. It says
volunteer.
Public member. That's when there was one public member. So.
Aaron Green is.
Right.
He is one member of the board.
But if everybody else comes on the 15th, you should still have quorum.
Right.
Technically, it's just the home inspector showed up. You have a quorum, the 3 out of 5.
We can't just let
two members of the board, including.
That's dangerous.
Oh,
so
what
is 15?
It's the home inspector's committee.
An engineer member and a public member. So if we have a polls member or an architect or engineer, but we can't have two. You would have to have either an architect and an engineer and a public member. So Aaron, but as a public, so we need an architect or an engineer.
I'll be at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Telephonically, I will be there.
Cool. All right.
Well, and just to be technical, I think Jack would have to appoint you, but he can do it. So
I think we did appoint.
Yeah, I was already appointed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
Just want to make sure. Okay.
Yeah.
We're good.
Okay.
We've lost that,
Jack. Let's see. So we are.
We're at
15A, our associations.
We're fine. We're still operation.
as Bacchus. I actually did have something here. Let's see. Give me one sec. Okay, rats. Well, I did update this page and I can't find page. But anyway, well, I know what I have for ASVAG is that they are continuing their task analysis survey for the exams. They had a meeting in January and they have the next one scheduled in April. I don't serve on that committee, so I'm not invited to that, but subject matter experts are and need to be registered by March. If, I don't know, Steve, if you were participating as a subject matter expert for that,
and then
let me know. I can forward you.
I was at one point.
I'll forward you the email if
okay,
you want,
yeah.
And okay, and then you can check it out and respond if you feel like, and let me know if I can help. Okay, and then CLARB, Jack, you want to talk about CLARB? I have a few things written down here.
Yeah, CLARB. Right now, I think the big deal for CLARB is trying to determine a definition of who qualifies to sit for the exam based on education, accredited education, and or experience, or all the above. And that's been going through the states, through many committees for a number of years. They're trying to zero in on a preferred definition. And I think there's allegedly getting close to that. And then that'll be coming before this board. I think even some of the CLARB members will come and present. There are some issues with that because, like in CARB, you get to join CLARB to get start your application process. I think the states control the testing location, but that's now going digital as well. So, I've been meeting with the Arizona chapter of ASLA, and there are some concerns about continuing education requirements that CLARB has that the state doesn't have. So, there's a lot of discussion, no resolution yet. So this will be coming back forth. The meetings I've had with ASLA have been interesting. We're more concerned about some of these crazy regulations coming out of cities, but I won't bore you with that, except to share horror stories after the session. but.
That's kind of what I had there. They're just continuing their job task analysis for the LARE is still coming up, and they have modified their uniform application, which now includes self-reported registration details and additional candidate information such as military status and a few other things. Each council record transmittal will include a unique identifier known as the candidate ID. And I asked Julie about how the new things in their uniform application have, if they've affected us, but she said we haven't received one as yet. So we'll let you know if that we see anything with that. And then they continue to prepare to revise the model law and regulations to align, promote greater diversity, equity, inclusion. Every single, association, that's DEI, you hear that over and over and over every webinar, which is great. That's all I have for CLARB. Is that all right? Okay. NCARB. So there's a lot going on with NCARB. Same thing. A lot of DEI, big push towards that. And they're just looking at everything. The thing that I continue to watch and find fascinating is how closely NCARB and the architects are working with the Council for Interior Design Qualifications, CIDQ. And they did a huge study and released a competencies objectives comparison report and a little promo kind of video thing that I watched. It's a result of 3 years of study and research performed by a collaborative team. So, Arizona doesn't have They don't look at interior design qualifications at all, but it's something that is increasing around the country. you know, many states have boards that have architects, landscape architects, and interior designers on there. I talked with the director from Texas this past week just to get some more information. I thought that was really an eye-opener for me because they have those three professions, but their interior designers don't need to be registered unless they're stamping plans, and which I can imagine people sitting out there going, what are they stamping? I mean, because people just don't realize how much in common that they actually have with architecture and the practice of architecture. And so based on a lot of the task analysis, they have percentages and similarities of how many of the testing things are similar to what comes on the architect's exam. And it is pretty high percentage, talking about zoning and building and life safety, universal accessibility, permitting requirements, construction things. I mean, it's much more involved than people realize for interior design. So I'm just going to keep my eyes and ears open and keep watching that.
Judith, if I may.
Yes,
we do have a council committee meeting March 3rd to the 5th in Charlotte, so I'll be attending that one and seeing how that all shakes out.
I think I'm virtual for that one.
That's right. You said you were virtual. I'll be there in person.
Right. That's right. Boy, there's a lot of meetings and mid-year meetings and zone meetings, and then you register and you're ready to go, and then they're like, just kidding, it's all virtual now, and I need like a color-coded chart for each association to keep track of everything, but I'm glad you're going in person, and I will be there with you virtually.
Great.
And just the last thing I would just say about the two, the interior design and architecture, that both of these professions have well-established procedures and really a lot of unique things that are specific to their disciplines as much as they have so many in common. So. Okay, NCWES. Clarence, any thoughts?
I think it's a regional, Western Regional elections going on.
So there was a Western Region Zone meeting that just got kiboshed to virtual.
Okay.
Recently. That's coming up. I'm so sorry, I don't have the dates on the top of my head, but coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, it seems like I got two things from them. One, I guess, what is it, State Line? They're having a convention. It's like May.
That's the Western Zone interim meeting in May. And actually, I do need to know, as our engineer and land surveyor, if you'll be attending that in person, because I have to get you registered as funded delegates.
I would not be
in for that.
If they have a virtual, I'll do that.
Okay, I will find out. I would think that they would offer that as well. It seems like right now that's almost always.
Well, I remember last time they didn't offer it. It was supposed to be in person. Then they canceled it.
Then they canceled it.
Then allowed the virtual.
Yeah. Okay, so. And the location is like an hour away from the airport in Reno, too. I don't know why they.
Yeah, it's real close to
Tahoe.
Do you want to think about
State
it,
80.
Clarence, and just let me know, or would you be inclined to attend that in person?
Which one is this?
This is the Western Zone Interim Meeting, May 19th through 21st.
Probably virtual.
Tahoe. So I don't know if it's offered virtually, but I will find out.
They didn't mention anything.
They didn't mention it.
Yeah.
But, again.
It was up in Reno until it burned.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. I will find that out. And let's see, the primary purpose of that meeting is for discussions to take place from boards, standing committees, task force, and board of directors, and CEO of NCWES, as well as elect zone vice president and assistant vice president.
What's the date in May?
May 19th through the 21st. I think it goes over a weekend.
They're also looking for committee members for different parts that they've got, licensed.
I would say pretty much every association is always welcoming people willing to serve on committees. They're always in need of committee members. definitely. And then the last one, FARB, there is a conference the end of this week, and Mike will be attending the board member portion on Thursday, and also Kurt and I will be attending that, and as well as Friday and Saturday virtually. So maybe we can report back something on that next month.
Is there call in information for that yet, Judith?
You know, I have not gotten an email either, so I'll try to check on that too.
I've got it as a placeholder on my calendar, but it's the whole thing. I don't
right?
think I need
I was
all that
searching
is.
For that too, and I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Call in info.
And when is the board part? Like, what part do I need to call in for?
So I know it's just Thursday for that section. But yeah, let me see what I can find out today on that. All right, that's it for me. Future board meetings. Just, I know, Stacy, I didn't want you to think that I forgot about the discipline-specific portion. I just didn't have that on this meeting, but
I was going to bug you if I didn't see it like the next time.
On my mind.
I was going to give it a breaker.
Mike, I'm going to have for next time also, you guys want to talk about opening a case regarding the 65 against that gal, whether or not to open an investigation again.
Yep, that
as
and appoint
a public member to the HIRC.
And if you guys, get your friends to apply to be a public member, make sure they check this board when they apply.
But anybody can apply. Even a registrant could be applied. They're just coming on as a public.
I doubt that they would appoint a registrant, but technically.
They could apply.
Could apply.
It'd be nice to get another engineer. Even if it's a public member.
There's way more professionals that are not registered that are engineers in the state than are. So they could be a public member and not registered.
Okay. So, last word I have is to thank Doug and Julie for all their efforts. Thank the staff for all the reports and assistance. Thank you. Anything else? We can adjourn.
12:33.
Done. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you, Blaine.
Thank you.
And thank you, Ken.
As always.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Julie.